from the high desert in the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's time zones. Every single one of them covered like a blanket by this radio program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. My honor and privilege to be escorting you through the weekend. And I guess I ought to note first, the ratings are in. The ratings have begun to come in for the various cities around the nation, and I get a special version for the weekends of the 2 days that I carry forth, Saturday and Sunday. And in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, the biggest radio markets by 1, 2, and 3. Not only were we number one in each category, but we had increased by some incredible 100-something%. For example, I think in L.A., New York was astounding. Chicago was astounding. I mean, it was just an amazing sweep, amazing sweep. So as I've always done over the years, even though it's now just the weekend, I want to thank you all. Just astounding numbers, astounding. All right, on my webcam this night is a, I thought, very special picture of a snowman. You don't want to miss this. It's kind of, it's humorous, let's put it that way. And so check it out. Just go to coasttocoastam.com, upper left-hand corner, Art's webcam, click on it. Something to let you know spring be a coming. All right. We have something going on in the Bell household, which I should tell you about. As you know, we have four cats. Four. Well, we're close to having number five, I'm afraid. Turns out a little white cat, seems to be a female, about a year or less old, has been coming up to our porch and laying on, you know, on the bench out there on the front porch. And so, once again, the Bells have deployed the Have a Heart trap. We have put in the Have a Heart trap a little bit of tuna fish, which they find totally irresistible. However, I must add, last night we put down, you know, two little dribbles of tuna fish before the Have a Heart trap, and this cat ate the two little dribbles of, and then didn't go in and feast on the really big feast inside. Of course, the door would have closed, so we may have a very smart female cat on our hands. I'll let you know as developments occur. It could well be that during one of my programs tonight or tomorrow, this little girl will walk into our trap, and then we have five cats. That's the way it's going to work out. We can't let her just stay out and fend for herself. She's taken care of a couple of birds. We found the carcasses, so she's hungry. All right, the following, what I'm going to do right now is sort of narrow casting, you know, and I fully understand that, but that's okay. My hobby is amateur radio, as you know. And I'm here to tell you tonight, there has been, I hope all the hams are listening, and if you're not, I'm going to repeat this tomorrow night so you'll get to hear it twice. I'm doing that so that the hams out there can call up their friends and say, hey, listen, and I hope what I'm about to do turns out all right. So turn on the best radio you have. There's been a giant technical advance in ham radio, in single sideband communications. It's called ESSB, Enhanced Single Sideband. Now, you're about to hear two very short recordings that I just made. Actually, I didn't make them at all. A friend of mine, Ben, in Salem, Oregon, made them. So both of these recordings were made, oh, I don't know, almost 1,000 miles away. They're of me, but they're made about 1,000 miles away. So they were recorded by the same station, about 900 or 1,000 miles, whatever Salem is from here. The first recording you're going to hear is standard single sideband that's been used for years by hams and other, you know, shortwave broadcasters. And it's the typical sort of Mickey Mouse sounding sideband. And the second represents the advance that I'm talking to you about, and for the hams out there, recorded by an ICOM radio at 3.6 kilohertz. So first, the 2.4, and then the enhanced sideband. Let's see what sounds best to you. Here is the standard old usual 2.4.
This is W6OBB in Pahrump, Nevada, with a brief recording at standard bandwidth of 2.4. Hello, test 1234.
I think you get the idea. Here is enhanced sideband.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Good evening. This is W6 Oscar Bravo Bravo, located in Pahrump, Nevada, where it is a beautiful evening at about 65 degrees right now on a Saturday night. Absolutely wonderful, and I'm giving you a demonstration of what audio at 3.6 sounds like.
All right, we'll hold it right there. So that should have been as plain to you as it was to me. This is a gigantic advance, and I'm doing it for two reasons, so that the hams out there who have never heard it before, if all they have is a 2.4 receiver, can hear it now. That's one good reason. And the second reason is, the organization that represents hams, you know, the AWRL, for some strange reason, even after the Federal Communications Commission has stated without any equivocation they will not regulate ham radio by bandwidth, and that's the question we're talking about here, bandwidth, they have put forward a proposal to the FCC that would, in fact, handcuff what has always been an experimental service. Ham radio is an experimental service. You know, that's what we're here for, to experiment, to develop new things. And this ESSB is a new thing. And guess what, folks? The FCC just announced, I mean, this is an advance that amateur radio operators came up with, but it's so good, the FCC just announced that the commercial broadcast stations, shortwave broadcast stations, are going to start using it. This enhanced SSB. And again, the FCC said recently they wouldn't regulate ham radio by bandwidth. Nevertheless, one of the most exciting changes in ham radio, and it is an exciting change. I mean, after all, one more time, listen to the difference, please. Listen carefully.
All right. This is W6OBB in Pahrump, Nevada.
All right. That versus what you're going to hear now.
Good evening. This is W6 Oscar Bravo Bravo.
What is easier to listen to? Well, there's not much choice there, is there? You know, I petitioned the hams to write to the league or whatever and say, let's not do this. I mean, what, for example, if some really spiffy new digital thing comes along that, you know, would be 4 kilohertz, and we will have shot ourselves in the foot. That wouldn't be a good idea. I mean, radios that have been made, hundreds, thousands, even hundreds of thousands of radios would suddenly be illegal because they would be too wide. We're talking about bandwidth here. And so instead of sounding like Mickey Mouse, it doesn't have to be that way anymore. As you can clearly hear, there's a significant difference. Now, I'll repeat this tomorrow night. So if you have a friend who's a ham radio operator, call him up and say, hey, listen, tomorrow night, because Art's going to, he's got something kind of important to talk about. That's ESSB. Now, let's look briefly at the rest of the world. Distressed, out of cash, in disguise, it seems a missing Georgia bride-to-be turned up on a seedy stretch of Route 66 and told authorities Saturday that she'd been abducted. Then finally copped to the truth. Seems she fled the feeling of pressure she had about her looming wedding. Jennifer Wilbanks, 32, was picked up by police after a bus trip that took her through Las Vegas, near me here, to a payphone just outside Albuquerque, 7-Eleven down there, where she called her fiancé, John. This would be a Dear John phone call, right? And said she'd been freed by kidnappers. So I don't know if that amounts to a Dear John or John, I'm nervous, we'll try it later kind of thing. Two veiled women shot at a tour bus, and a man, the brother of one shooter and the fiancé of the second, blew himself up as he leapt off a bridge during a police chase on Saturday. All three attackers died, and nine people, four of them foreigners, were wounded in an apparent revival of violence against Egypt's vital tourism industry. As a matter of fact, when Ramona and myself were in Egypt, we barely escaped a big slaughter that occurred there. Oh, this is sort of another program note. I know I promised last weekend that you would hear George Lutz of the Amityville Horror. And somehow the left hand and the right hand didn't know what they were doing. It ended up with a repeat of the incredible Evelyn Paglini, but not what was promised, which was George Lutz. There's a big deal going on now about the Amityville Horror, as you know, with the remake out. And so we received so many emails, so many. In fact, this guy goes on, I didn't go out. You see, he had told all his friends. So he says, I didn't go out the next day for fear of facing the wrath of my friends. It was also meant to be an introduction for many of them to Coast to Coast, and what an introduction it would have been. Well, and here's another one. I was disappointed when the rebroadcast of the George Lutz interview did not air on 42405. I pray you decide to air this interview in the very near future, or make it a blast from the past show that perhaps the subscribers can listen to. All right, well, you're saved. What we're going to do, because we got so many emails, I mean, it was a tragic technical screw-up of some kind. I don't know what happened. We are going to replay the George Lutz interview next Saturday, May 7th. So I really feel very badly about that. I'm poorly about it. I'm very sorry we didn't get it on. It's just one of those things. And so we'll get it on May 7th. It is really worth hearing. George Lutz was an amazing interview. The real story of the real Amityville Horror, and it's quite a story. So coming up May 7th. More than 4 years after solar maximum, the sun continues to produce very big sunspots. There's one transiting the solar disk now. It would be about five times the size of planet Earth. That's big. In other words, big enough to see with the unaided eye, but please do not look at the sun without aid, or you may end up blind as a bat. The sun can hurt you, so be very careful about that. But there is indeed a very, very large sunspot up there. Alright, I'm already getting assailed by tons and tons of fast blasts. Gary in Newburgh, Oregon says, Art, you sounded great on the SSB. I'll write and support it. Well, write the league and support it. The American Radio Relay League. And Aaron in Ontario says, outrage is what I feel about what the FCC is doing. Wrong. It's not the FCC. This is a proposal to the FCC that is going to be made by the American Radio Relay League that I think is terribly misguided. And then I've got about 10 people begging me to do it one more time. Okay, very briefly, this is a standard recorded at the same distance by the same person on the same, not the same night, actually different nights. At any rate, one is 2.4, the standard old, in my opinion, Mickey Mouse sounding hard to listen to sideband. Here you go.
This is W6OBB in Crop, Nevada, with a brief recording at standard bandwidth of 2.4.
Sounds a little...
Test 1234. Once again, this is a recording at a standard bandwidth generally used at 2.4. Hello, test 1234. W6OBB...
Sounds a little Mickey Mouse-ish, right? A little thin. Well, here it is, not quite so thin.
Good evening, this is W6 Oscar Bravo Bravo, located in Pahrump, Nevada, where it is a beautiful evening at about 65 degrees right now on a Saturday night. Absolutely wonderful, and I'm giving you a demonstration of what audio at 3.6 sounds like. So there you have it. From Pahrump, Nevada, I'm Art Bell, W6OBV.
There you have it indeed. That's quite a difference, I would say. Now, I don't know if it's coming through your radios, and you're able to hear the difference. It was my hope that you could. I mean, it is a gigantic, gigantic advance. And being an experimental band, we don't want to go backwards. We want to go forward. There's so much excitement about this on the ham bands. I'll repeat that tomorrow night. So if you didn't get a chance to get it or whatever, please now don't fast blast me. Wait until tomorrow night. We'll repeat it. This is worrisome. Do you remember when Ed Dames talked about bees dying? He said a lot of bees would die. Hello, Art. I just saw this on mainstream TV about the honeybees dying off. Half of them are already dead. It brought back for me what Ed Dame said. Eek. By late spring, we could see an awful lot of bees die, warned Lawrence Cutts, a bee inspector with the Florida Division of Plant Industry. We're in considerable trouble. U.S. beekeeper Jane Beckman said, this bee die-off is nearly unprecedented. I've been on the bee biology list a long, long time, and there's no record of a bee die-off of this magnitude. In the U.K., United Kingdom, Peter Dalby said that Varroa is already responsible for some keepers losing up to 90% of hive populations. That's incredible. And if that's not enough for you, that's in the category of bees, we now have exploding toads. And I'm sure if you listened to the program last week, George could not have avoided reading about exploding toads. Boom! More than 1,000 toads have indeed puffed up and exploded in a Hamburg pond in recent weeks. And German scientists have no explanation whatsoever for what could be causing the combustion. Both the pond's water and the body parts, of the toads have been tested, but scientists have been unable to find a bacteria or any kind of virus or anything that would cause the toads to swell up and pop. So a thousand toads have blown up in a pond in Germany. Good Lord, that is absolutely, absolutely awful. You're sitting at your local pond. Can you imagine just sitting at your local pond, enjoying the sounds of the pond and the water and the little insects that are buzzing around when, kaboom, a frog blows up? Absolutely sort of ruin everything for you, wouldn't it? I'm going to read you this email. I debated whether I had to read this to you or not, and I guess I'm still debating. And it could be BS, but it doesn't come across that way at all, frankly. It simply says, hi, Art. I'm a New York Police Department detective, and we've been getting some intel on a possible electromagnetic pulse attack by third world nations lobbing a scud with a nuke into our atmosphere, bringing the U.S. to its knees. Can you get hold of an expert who could discuss the scenarios and the ramifications? And I have the name of this officer, but I think that I will withhold it. Oil prices. How are you doing at the pump out there, folks? Listen to this. Will oil prices hit $380 a barrel? A new report is warning that crude prices, this is from unknown country, by the way, now about $50 a barrel. That's what they are. They're $50 a barrel right now. Right? $50 a barrel. So try and imagine, you know, base $50 is what at the pump now? Crawling up on $3? We went through Baker, California the other day, and then premium there was $3.19. So everywhere else crawling up on $3. So $50 a barrel now, $380 a barrel by 2015. $380 a barrel. So you can only imagine what the pump price would be. I'm sure that could be calculated. Perhaps one of you would be willing to do that and tell me what the pump price at $380 a barrel would be. That's what analysts are saying. That's incredible. I mean, absolutely incredible. That's over the top. And long before, in my opinion, it ever gets to $380 a barrel, the economy is going to go. I mean, we get everything we have trucked to us. Or if it isn't trucked to us, it's flown or it goes on a train or whatever mode of transportation. But all of them eat up diesel number two or whatever it is they use to get it from here to there. So everything is going to start costing more and the economy is going to go. And while we're on that subject, the economy, there's a loose connection to what the president has been saying about Social Security, and this is blowing me away. really blowing me away. Basically, what was the exact quote? I've got it here. I wrote it down here somewhere here. The president said he's going to change Social Security so that it will help people most in need. Now, it'll help people most in need. What does that mean? That means, isn't that what welfare programs do? They give money to the needy, and I'm not against welfare at all. I know there are people who have legitimate need, absolutely no question about that, none. No question. But, what's this about? We're not supposed to turn Social Security into a welfare program, are we? Or are we? Maybe we are. Anyway, it's sad. So, President Bush, I don't know what you're doing out there. But I wouldn't think this would be the way to do it. That's something, if I've got it correct, wasn't the promise that we pay into it all our lives? It's an insurance program, not welfare, but insurance. And then when we get to the right age, we begin to get it back. Wasn't that it?
To burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories all, and to use them to help us to
we're about to go into open lines, so the numbers are a little different through the weekend. Listen very carefully for that which is appropriate to you.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Top of the hour comes Greg Braden and the God Code. The secret of our past, the promise of our future. He's an expert at connecting the past and future, and he thinks he's found something in our genes. There is... And strange. All right, to the phones we go. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, good morning, Art.
Good morning, sir.
Calling from Wham Country up here in western New York.
Welcome.
I just wanted to a couple points on the energy pending energy crisis.
Mm-hmm.
President Bush's energy policy. The two concerns I had, the way I understand it was the drilling to be done in the Arctic Reserve, that most or all of that oil was going to be sold overseas, and they were all fired up to. Past that ability to drill in the Arctic Reserve, and it's not going to be used here in our nation.
Well, it's really strange the way the whole oil thing works. I mean, we ship oil from Alaska to Japan, which doesn't seem right, but I guess economically somehow it is. I mean, the whole world's oil market is operates in sort of a strange way, and you can't think of it from our point of view here in the U.S., but sort of as a, I don't know, a world market.
I can't help but thinking that the Bush heritage of being involved with big oil.
You don't think, do you?
It kind of seems a little one-sided at times.
Huh. I've thought about this many times. I noticed in the president's speech the other day, he mentioned biodiesel. I thought that was at least a sort of a little jump ahead. I'm really frightened about this. I mean, I talked to somebody a few moments ago who did the calculation and said that at $380, accounting for inflation we've got now, it'd be about $14 and something a gallon at the pump. Can you imagine that?
That would be the end of life as we know it.
You betcha. You bet it would.
Very quickly.
Very quickly indeed.
I tend to think that it's going to happen a little sooner than later.
Matter of fact, if we're nearing $3 a gallon now, which I had predicted last year, and if you sort of consider between $3 and between $14 and something, where's the breaking point? I don't think it's that far this side, the other side of $3 myself. I mean, $5, $6, I don't know.
At what point do we start down the other side of the hill?
That's right.
Have a good evening, Art.
You as well, sir. Thank you. East of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Art. This is Justin in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Hello.
And I had a question for you. You were talking about the ESSB.
Yes.
And you're talking about bandwidth. And I was kind of curious, how much more bandwidth does that have compared to the radio I have now?
Well, for example, standard sideband, as I mentioned, is 2.4. And what you heard in the second piece, the ESSB piece, that was received at 3.6 in a standard ICOM radio.
That's a pretty big difference there.
That's a pretty good size difference, but there's audio processing equipment and stuff like that involved too. And I don't know how well it came through your radio, but there's a pretty damn big difference in the way it sounds and the amount of fatigue you have in trying to listen to it, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that was excellent, Art. It sounded real good. And now, so this is not something I can send my radio in and have it modified or anything like that, is it?
Oh, of course it is.
Oh, even my Ranger 2950?
There's nothing, sir, that cannot be modified.
All right.
It's just a matter of will.
All right. Well, thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome. Take care. It's just a gigantic breakthrough. I mean, there's no question about it. And again, you know, I'll repeat it tomorrow night for those who want others to hear it, that sort of thing. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Mark in Amagordo, New Mexico.
Hi.
I just wanted to say, wow, on the ham radio thing.
Oh, you could hear the difference? See, I wasn't sure whether it would come through the radio or not.
Well, and at least through the AM radio.
So you could tell the difference.
Oh, yes, there's a big difference.
Okay.
I'm actually a rookie ham radio operator myself. Unfortunately, my radio is sort of kaput right now.
Kaput?
Yeah, kaput.
Yes, I'm familiar with kaput.
about the gas problem.
Yes.
My friend's school, they actually have to start riding the bus again because they can't afford the gas prices.
Really?
Yes.
Well, there's going to be more and more of that as time goes on, so we had, in my opinion, sir, better get off our collective duffs and start doing some alternative energy work fast. There ought to be a Manhattan-style project to move America as quickly as possible into all these. You know, there's no single answer. There's really no magic bullet in this area. We're going to have to do biodiesel. We're going to have to do solar panels and wind and every other form of energy that we can muster up, and we're going to have to start doing it damn soon or we're going to be in trouble. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Yes.
Hi, I want to talk about the jogger that went missing. News recently.
The lady who apparently got cold high heels and, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was the weirdest story, and it almost seems like the way the news slanted it was It was just totally insane. Now,
well, you know, we worry a lot, of course, about kidnappings, and they thought that's what it was, and that's why it became a story. If she had just gotten cold feet, that would have been one thing, but to come up with that story because of it, that's why she got the attention.
But the idea that she perpetrated a hoax, it was really the media that perpetrated a hoax on the American people. At first, you know, they said she got abducted. And
well, that's not the media's fault. I mean, it was thought she was abducted because that's what the message that went back, that she was abducted, right? So it's not the media that perpetrated the hoax. The media just sort of reported what really happened, I guess. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, I'd like to speak with Art.
That would be me. Turn your radio off, please.
I'm going to do it right now, Art.
That's good. Thinks I'm a screener, although she did call me an art.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
You're very welcome. All right. What is your first name?
My name is Tom. I'm calling from Jersey City, New Jersey.
Okay, Tom.
Listening to you on WABC. Of course, you're number one here.
Man, I'll tell you, the ratings were incredible.
Listen, let me tell you real quick. We had a, I won't mention the talk show host who was on in your spot last year.
Yes.
And we all missed you a lot. And maybe, you know, some of us sent in emails and recalled. So we're glad to have you here. You've been here a while, but it's just a pleasure, Art.
Happy to be there.
Listen, real quick, I'm calling in on an incident that happened Thursday night here. I'm right across, we're on the Hudson here in Jersey City, and we face Manhattan. And we usually have the large Sikorsky helicopters that patrol our skies here.
All right.
Sometime around 4:15 in the morning, I guess that's Friday morning, we had like five of them lined up, and we could see them right from our window, and there were like 25 to 30 white lights that were all over the place. Now, we're on the glide path to Newark Airport. They had shut down the glide path, so there was no commercial aircraft coming in. And they were out there for about 40 minutes.
Well, what do you think they were doing?
Well, they were after these white lights. And the reason I know this, about 17 or 18 minutes into us watching this, my wife and I out the window, two of them came close enough that we could just see what they were. They were just white circles. We couldn't see anything physical there.
Mm-hmm.
And as one of the Sikorsky helicopters peeled off to turn around towards it, they just took off. They were gone.
Mm-hmm.
And there were quite a few over. And we thought, well, we'd see something on the news here or something, but nothing was ever played. But they were up there for about an hour and a half. And the activity lasted probably over 40 minutes.
Well, that's bizarre. Maybe somebody will call in with an explanation, you know, some kind of exercise going on or something. West of the Rockies, you're a dial tone, so we'll not talk to you. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Oh, my God, I am?
Yes. Turn your radio off, please.
Turn the radio off, please.
Passing the order on.
Oh, wow. Well, I have a couple of questions. Well, number one, I will not be shy on this. I will say, you know, at one point I had an abortion. At another time, I said to the aliens, I said, come and take this baby away from me, and they did. And they did, and then that was a second child, but then I ended up having twins.
Wait. Who took the child away?
The aliens did.
The aliens. So you think that was a hybrid, and they just came to claim their own?
Yes, indeed, they did.
Hmm.
Because I am in great teachings.
Well, maybe they feel that they would be better off bringing this child up as a gray.
As a gray. It was one of the, yes, indeed, as one of the grays.
Actually a gray American.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, as a gray American, and I gave it up. And then I ended up having twins, and I lived my life, and I've lived my life, and I've lived my life. And
well,
now
Wait. Are the twins also alien? Half alien?
The twins have aliens that come to visit.
No, this is
Raven. Raven has...
No, wait. This is a specific question. Are the twins half alien? Or are they just friends with aliens?
I really don't know. I know that Raven...
Well, you were there. Right?
They, to the best of my knowledge, are not. But that Raven does have the Greys, and that Naya does have the Pleiadians.
All right. Well, we'll hold it right there. Raven and Nyla, huh? Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Well, good morning, Mr. Bell. I was calling to ask you about something I had read in a computer magazine about you lending your voice on a certain computer game.
Really? What have you read?
I read that there is a certain computer game. How do you want me to spill the beans, or would you like to have the honor?
I don't care. You go ahead and spill them.
Okay, I had read in the most recent issue of PC Gamer,
yes,
about a game coming out called Prey,
yes,
that features clips of you doing voiceover with callers reporting UFO activity that correlates with events in the games, and I was very interested to know if that was true or not.
Yes, I believe that is to be true.
Oh, how much voiceover work have you done, or have you not?
Absolutely none yet. It's arranged to be done, so I guess I'll be doing it.
Oh, good deal. Good deal. I look forward to buying that game when it comes out.
I thought it'd be fun, you know?
I think it will be, and it'll certainly lend, kind of a neat factor to it. whether you're a fan of video games or not, it'll certainly be something for all the listeners who are into that type of thing, and... before I go, I just want to say congratulations on your new ratings, and I love listening to you. I actually listen to you on XM Satellite Radio, and so that comes a little bit clearer than the local AM stations.
Then I take it the demo I did a little while ago on XM was very clear.
Oh, yes. It was clear and definite, the difference between the two of them.
There you are. All right. Thank you very, very much, and take care. It's true. The makers of this new game, Prey, contacted me, and I said, sure, you know, it sounds like fun. At this point in my career, I just take on projects that are, you know, sound like they're going to be fun. And I've never been in a... Well, actually, I have been featured in a video game, I think, but my voice has never been in one, so that'll be new. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Is this Art Bell?
Yes.
Hello.
Hello. I think you hung up. After all of that, East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Excuse me?
Okay, turn your radio off.
Keith in Mount Greenville?
No. Turn your radio off.
It's off.
Okay, good. Now, you're on the air.
Hey, Art. This is Keith in Greenville, Michigan.
Hello.
And I had a weird incident happen when I was a senior in high school. I had a dream that my grandfather passed away. And my dad told me that he passed away. And I remember the dream, all around my dad, it was all black.
This was the very day, same day?
Yes.
Account deal?
Yep, it happened about, I remember my dad kept telling me grandpa's dead. And I kept saying no, and I go to my dad and try to give him a hug. He pushed me away. Keith, your grandfather's dead. And I said no. And I woke up from the dream, it was like 20 after 4 in the morning. And I got to go to school in the morning and told my mom about it. And probably 15 minutes later, a phone rang, and my mom took it, went to the bathroom, and came out and said, Keith, your dad wants to talk to you. My parents were divorced.
Okay, well, I think there, and then he told you. I think there's absolutely no question that the human mind does receive these kinds of messages in the form of a dream or even in a waking state. I think there's no question about it, at least none in my mind. The only question remaining in my mind, and it'll probably forever be there, is what's over on the other side of this physical existence. But the fact that we have increased and abilities that we don't yet understand in our brains, I think is almost simply without question. The living human brain, without question, has qualities that... I think we'll not know about for decades, or perhaps 100 years yet. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Danny from New Orleans.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I was wondering if I heard your demonstration of your ham radio, and I could definitely hear the difference there.
Could you? Good.
Enhanced
single sideband is a gigantic leap forward, and I mean, if you had to listen to one of those two, kind of duh, huh?
Yeah, no doubt. The second was much, much clearer, even on my AM radio here.
Good. I wasn't sure how that would come out. What else is up?
Do you use, or have you ever used, you remember before the internet, with your ham radio system, bulletin boards?
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness, yes, sir.
Way back in the old days?
I ran a bulletin board.
Did you?
I wrote a bulletin board. I wrote the code for Commodore 64 bulletin board, and I had that up for years.
Really? Which one? Do you remember?
Not right this second. I can't remember what it was actually called. And I also wrote a modem program to go with it, and that was the end of my writing career, incidentally. And then we compiled it, and we did a lot of file sharing back then.
Yeah, me too. Do you use the AX25 protocol with under Linux? I believe it is.
Oh, this is all new stuff now.
Yeah.
No, we were running at pathetically small speeds. I'm talking about a time when Commodore was king. I'm talking about a time when a 1 gigabyte hard drive was unheard of, but I had 11 of them. A whole gigabyte, my God! I think it was a couple thousand bucks per drive. Oh, my, how times have changed, eh? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Jeff from Birmingham.
Yo, Jeff.
When are you going to have Gene Myers from Space Island Group back on? I think he's got some new announcements coming up. I believe he's working with some folks over in Washington.
Oh, I think that's right. Turn your radio down, please. I'd love to have Gene Myers back on if he's got something really cooking. And
he does this time. I talked to him not too long ago, and it's truly amazing that I think his plan is the only one that links up pretty well with what our new NASA chief administrator wants, and that's a shuttle-drive heavy-lift launch vehicle. Because this Delta IV they're making in my state, in Decatur, Alabama, that thing is a real dog of a rocket, and that's something that people aren't talking about much.
I'm very worried about what our next generation is going to be of almost everything, whether it's passenger aircraft. The Concorde is now gone.
Sickening.
I mean, here we are in 2005. We can't even go faster than the speed of sound as a passenger anymore.
The Europeans are kicking our behinds with that magnificent new A380. It's not just that. The French have the Ariane 5.
Yep.
We've got this magnificent new Tarn Valley Bridge. We could stand to learn a lot from them.
And we haven't even gone back to the moon yet.
With all the money we wasted on this war, we could have not only had that, but we could have built a Bering Strait Bridge and got our oil money from the Russians.
Right,
which made a lot more sense to me than all this other nonsense.
Might even be on Mars by now.
Oh, very quickly. Both Boeing and Lockheed Martin with the Zenit Sea Launch and the Atlas V used Russian space shuttle Scrap 1 booster engines, the RD-170s and RD-180s, used in the Energy of Iran's Scrap 1 boosters.
All right, thanks. Take care. We've got a break. We're at the top of the hour here. We're going to pause, and then we're going to talk with Greg Braden. He's been on before. He's a fascinating guy.
talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed. Good morning. Coming up, Greg Braden, New York Times best-selling author. Greg Braden has been a featured guest for international conferences and media specials exploring the role of spirituality in technology. That in itself is extremely interesting. He is a former senior computer systems designer for Martin Marietta Aerospace, a computer geologist for Phillips Petroleum, and a technical operations supervisor for Cisco Systems. Greg is now considered a leading authority on bridging the wisdom of the past with the science, medicine, and peace, I hope, of our future. His journeys into the remote mountain villages, monasteries, and temples of times past, coupled with his background in the hard sciences, uniquely qualify him to bring the benefit of long-lost traditions to the forefront of our lives today. From his groundbreaking book, Awakening to Zero Point, to his pioneering work in Walking Between the Worlds and the controversy of the Isaiah Effect, Greg Braden ventures beyond the traditional boundaries of science and spirituality, offering meaningful solutions to the challenges of our time. His most recent book, The God Code, describes the 12-year-long project and the remarkable discovery that now reveals the text message, get this, coded as the DNA within every cell of every life. That would mean all of us. In a moment, Greg Braden.
Hello, my...
What would it mean to discover an ancient language, a literal message, hidden within the DNA of life itself? What we once believed of our past is about to change, according to Greg Braden. A remarkable discovery linking the ancient biblical alphabets to modern chemistry reveals that a lost code, including a text message revealing a clue to the mystery of our origins, has lived within all of us all along. Following the clues discovered in 4,000-year-old texts, the language of life may now be replaced with key letters of the ancient languages translated. The message reveals that the precise letters of God's ancient name are encoded as the genetic information in every cell of every life. Greg, welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, Art. It's a pleasure to hear your voice, and I'm really excited about being here this evening. Thank you.
And excited to have you. That's quite a radical statement to make. That's pretty radical that there's a secret code hidden in our DNA with a link to our origins and God's name in there.
Well, what makes it even more exciting, Art, this project that, as you mentioned in the introduction, it is the result of 12 years of research. The project isn't complete. It's ongoing. And it appears that what we see is the genome, is our genetic code, actually exists as a code in many layers. In each layer has its own key to unlock the message in that layer. We are still working with the deeper keys and the deeper layers, so there is much, much more to go.
All right, well, what is exactly the God Code?
The God Code is it is the result of 12 years of research. It began when I was an engineer in the defense industry during the last years of the Cold War, looking for what I suspected was a universal principle of peace that exists in all life. And once recognized, my hope is that that message would prevent us from finding ourselves in the kinds of wars that we found ourselves in so many times in the 20th century.
Well, the fact that we have found ourselves in so many wars, Greg, what does that say? Does that say the message is not clear, or there are conflicting messages, or what?
I think it's so new, Art. This is to a scientist, this is absolutely mind-boggling. What we're going to discuss over these next 3 hours, there's nothing in our existing training in science that allows us in the past to cross the traditional boundaries that have separated science from ancient and spiritual traditions and the sciences themselves. The only way to arrive at the kinds of information we're going to discuss tonight is, in fact, to cross those traditional boundaries between chemistry, geology, biology, physics, language, to marry all of that wisdom into a greater knowledge that tells us more than any of them do individually. And when we do that, that is the way that this information is revealed. So my belief has always been that we are an intentional species. Right? I think we're here on purpose. I don't claim to know who or what's responsible for our being here. But the research and the more we understand about the complexities of DNA strongly suggest, as Francis Crick and so many other scientists have said as well, that there is an underlying intelligence that precedes the human race here as we know it today.
All right. I understand that we have something called, the scientists call, junk DNA, which is, first of all, define junk DNA for me. What is it?
Well, up until last year, junk DNA was DNA that looked like it had no purpose. And the way the way that scientists would try to explain it away is they said they were vestiges of ancient DNA that we no longer use.
Like the appendix.
Sure, that was the best guess. As of last year, 2004, however, some radical discoveries in the world of genetics showed not only is junk DNA not an appendage that we're no longer using, that it is actually through what we have called junk DNA that the instructions are coded for the rest of our DNA to do what it does.
Hmm.
So that what we've always thought was junk DNA is perhaps some of the most vital elements of the DNA. It has the instructions that tells the rest of the genetic code what to do.
And somehow you found a message within that, within the junk DNA.
Well,
right?
It wasn't in the junk DNA. What I began looking at, Art, coming from the place that I believe that we are here on purpose, I asked myself a question. If we aren't an intentional species, it makes tremendous sense to me that somewhere in our past we would have been left a clue that tells us that. And it makes very little sense that that clue would have been, excuse me, left on a temple wall or in a single text that could crumble over time. It made tremendous sense to look within the creation of life itself for that code.
I would have to agree. It does make sense.
Sure. This is in the late 1980s. We did not know about DNA then, certainly what we know now. I was working in a defense industry in an area of software development that we call pattern recognition. And the first time I saw human DNA come across, the sequences come across my computer screen, I looked at it and I said, wow, I don't know what it says, but there are definitely patterns there. This is not a random sequence. And
okay.
That led me on the search.
All right. I wonder if we're headed toward something like the Bible code.
Well, as we get into this tonight, Art, what you're going to find is there are direct links, correlations between the way the Bible code and the Torah are encoded and the way that it appears the DNA in all life is encoded.
Greg, I haven't made up my mind totally about the Bible code yet. It's totally intriguing.
Sure.
The whole concept is intriguing, but I'm not personally certain whether it's valid or not. Are you?
What I've seen, the jury's out on precisely why it works the way it works, all right? But what I have seen, the little that I have had the opportunity to work with the codes directly, in addition to reading what all the other researchers have found.
Right.
And for listeners that may not be familiar with the Bible code, this is a code that is found only in the Torah, the first five books of the Hebrew Bible and subsequently the Christian Old Testament. There is something about the way the Torah was written that makes it unique. It stands alone from any other text, and this code works only with the Torah.
I interviewed Drosnin, and I must say he is very, very, very convincing. It seems way past chance probability, way, way past.
Well, I think as with the code in our DNA, I believe that the Bible code as we know it today is incomplete. I think we've only scratched the surface, and that is why the jury is still out. My sense is that as we go into the deeper message of the way the Bible code works, there will be less question as to whether or not it's an authentic code or not.
Mm-hmm. And so the question, as in the Bible code, when I had Drosnin on, I asked him this, and I'll ask you,
right.
What are the odds that this message has occurred by chance, as a coincidence of some sort of odd circumstances? I'm sure you've done the math, or somebody has,
sure,
on what you found.
Sure. Well, I asked myself that question as we begin to share what this code is saying tonight. The first time that the translation came back to me from the linguist who was helping with translate these ancient languages, my next question is, what are the chances? Could this be a fluke?
That's right.
And the chances were 0.00042% that this the message that we're going to discuss tonight happened as an accident or as a fluke of nature, which is about 1 in 256,000 are the odds that it's a fluke.
So you, to be clear, you collected this message or deciphered this message from our structured DNA, right?
Precisely. Precisely.
Whew.
And going back into my time in the aerospace industry, I didn't understand then what I now understand about DNA, and I began looking for this message the way I was trained as a scientist to look in the world around me, Art, and it was fascinating. It led me on a journey into the temples and the tombs of Egypt and the monasteries and the highlands in central China, all through South America, Bolivia, Peru, the shamanic traditions all through the desert southwest and India and Nepal, looking as a scientist for the clues. And all of the clues simply said, stop looking out here. You're not going to find the answer to who you are in the world around you. They all said, look within. And I began to take that clue literally, and when I did, following the instructions that were left in a 4,000-year-old Hebrew text, marrying that with the best science of our time, that's how this translation came about.
All right. You're educated to look for patterns. When you looked at our DNA, what did you roughly see that made you say, yikes, there is a pattern there?
Repetitive sequences, precisely the same repetitive sequences coming up again and again and again, separated by vast distances of other stuff that I still don't recognize. It's all about language. If for the purposes of our conversation tonight, if our listeners, if we can begin to think, when we talk about cells, we typically think of cells as these spherical capsules of the sticky, gooey, protoplasmic stuff.
Right.
And each cell has 23 pairs or 46 chromosomes that are made of long strands of DNA that are made of shorter strands of genes. And
right.
That's the way we think about it. If we can use the following metaphor for our evening, it will help tremendously in visualizing how this works. If we can think of each cell as an entire library, the average human has about 50 trillion cells in the body, so 50 trillion libraries in our bodies, and each of those libraries, each of those 46 chromosomes, if we can think of those as a book, and if we can think of the long strands of DNA as chapters within the book, and the shorter segments of genes, if we can think of those as paragraphs and sentences, that goes a long way in helping us to find the new metaphor for looking at this information in life, because it appears that's precisely the way this works.
Well, I have a very limited understanding of genetics, but I guess it is the code that tells our body at different times during its life how to proceed, to grow this, grow that, begin doing this, begin doing that. I mean, it's sort of like an instruction manual and operating manual for the body, right?
Well, that's the way we think of it today. It appears it works that way. And just as every book before chapter one has a preface or a foreword or an introduction, it appears that our DNA has precisely the same thing, and it took 12 years to crack the code for the introduction. The introduction is what we're going to talk about tonight, and it's what this God code is all about. Deeper layers have different codes to translate them, and we're in the process of translating those now. If we were to do this program 6 months from now, I think we'd know a lot more then than certainly than we know now.
There's an author I frequently interview, and it's irresistible to quote him. He wrote a book about the God part of the brain. And the contention is that we all have a mortal fear of death, and so our brain as a defense mechanism has cooked up a need to worship.
Mm.
And is there any correlation to the message that you found that sounds familiar with a need to worship?
Art, to me, that would be an interpretation in my my projection of my feelings on that interpretation. What is so powerful about what we're going to discuss tonight is that we don't have to believe anything.
Okay.
The evidence is there. There is an intelligent message encoded as the cells of life, and we can read it the way you read the text of a book or a newspaper, and for that to happen the way it has happened, suggests strongly that we are part of something perhaps greater than we've ever imagined.
How long is the message?
The introduction into the cells of all life, it is a very brief message. And we can get into that message as early in this program as you'd like to.
Well, I'm dying to know, and everybody else is too. So how much have you actually found in? Before you give it to me, how much have you actually found in there? You found this? Have you found more? Is there more yet to find?
The introduction has been found, validated, and confirmed by the experts, and I'm comfortable sharing that. The deeper layers of the message, until we can validate precisely everything that's happening, I feel responsibility to have that all confirmed and validated before, and we're still working on it. We don't know. We simply don't know what all the deeper layers are saying to us. But I'd like to share early on, right now, the introduction into the cells of all life, from a single cell amoeba to a blade of grass to the complexity of a human, at this topmost layer reads the same, and it literally reads as the words, God eternal within the body. God eternal within the body. And when we look at a strand of DNA, at the topmost layer, we're literally looking at different combinations of those words of God within the body.
God eternal
within the body. It doesn't say who God is or where God came from, but one of the things that's so interesting is that the name of God that's encoded into the cells is precisely the same name that we find in 2,200-year-old texts.
Which is?
Which is it is a Hebrew letter form, the Hebrew word Yah, or a version of Yahweh, is what we find. We can talk about this as we go through the program this evening. When we first did the translation, it's done through a mathematic code. And
But was this done in the same manner as the Bible code? In other words, every fifth something or something?
No.
This was written straight out across, numerical cross to exactly this?
Precisely.
That's amazing.
Well, it is amazing, and what's even more amazing is, although we used ancient biblical Hebrew as the first language, it also reads the same way in the Arabic language, and appears that it reads in Sanskrit.
That's almost impossible. So, all right, hold on. Greg Braden is my guest. So, found within the genetic code, all of us, the message, unambiguous message, God eternal within the body. Man, oh man, if that's true...
So tired of all the darkness in our lives. to make it blow away, blow away, blow away. All I got to do is to love you. All I got to be is to be happy. All it's got to take is some hope to make it blow away, blow away, blow away.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Always love this song. You know who that is? George Harrison. Because it's simple and it's happy. Kind of like the message that Greg Braden has found. Simple and kind of happy, I'd say. Wouldn't you? Anyway, we'll be right back. Stay right where you are.
Experts.
As I'm sure you know, Greg, I get messages on a computer here as the show goes on.
Yeah.
And one of the very first things that people want to know about you is whether your faith is coloring your discovery.
Well, it's a good question. I was raised in no single faith. I was given the opportunity. I was raised in a conservative community in the Midwest, in Missouri. And I had friends from many, many different faiths, and I spent a lot of time, I was comfortable in a Catholic church or a Jewish synagogue as I was in a mosque or anywhere else. So I've had the opportunity to experience many different traditions. And interestingly, is when the book was released for review to theologians in many of those traditions, although the traditions are different from one another, the majority of them have felt that it supports their belief that we are part of a greater existence or a greater...
Uh-huh. All that said, though, whatever your current faith is, Greg, are you certain that your faith is not has not affected your discovery?
Well, I do not subscribe to a single organized faith.
It doesn't matter.
Sure, and I don't consider myself a religious man, although I do consider myself a deeply spiritual man in the sense that I believe that life is connected and that we're more than a biological fluke in this world. And I think that spark is what led me to search for this code to begin with. So I was looking for something that would tell us that we're greater than the differences that have separated us in the past. And from that perspective, that template is what led me on that search.
All right. Did you find anything in there that using the same code didn't make sense?
Not yet. I have not. It's interesting because the language, the way this language is set up, it's all about language, and we haven't even really talked about how this code works.
Well, let's talk about that. In other words, how precisely can DNA be read as text, as words? How does it work?
Sure. Well, and I think by answering that question, it'll answer probably some of the other questions that I certainly would have if I were listening to this broadcast right now.
Okay.
It's interesting. Western science today, when we define life, we do it using elements from a periodic table. We call things like hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, carbon. And we use words to define those. And for each of those elements, we can also describe them with numbers. We've got all kinds of numbers, atomic weight, atomic mass, all kinds of things.
Sure.
That we can use. It appears that ancient traditions did precisely the same thing 5,000 years ago. They described our world through words, and they had very precise numbers linked to the letters of the alphabets in the words. What has happened is over 5,000 years, the words changed. but the numbers never changed.
Right.
So this research project, when I began looking into these ancient texts and into the traditions from many different parts of the world, it was an opportunity for me to follow their beliefs and see how they correlate to Western science, which in fact they do. So all we're doing is we're looking at the way Western science describes life with words and number. Ancient traditions describe life with word and number. The words changed, the numbers didn't. We're looking for numbers of hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, carbon, the stuff that DNA is made out of.
Right.
And we're looking for their equivalents in the alphabets of ancient languages. And in what are called the core or the root alphabets, such as Biblical Hebrew, ancient Arabic, Sanskrit, alphabets like that.
So help us out here a little bit, you know, those of us who don't quite get all this yet. How do you read a DNA strand as words? It has something to do with numbers. I've got that.
Well, before we even get that far, I'm just going to make a statement. A lot of our live audiences are surprised by this next statement, and I had to research it pretty extensively when I was writing the book. All languages, I have yet to find a single language that does not fall into the category that we're about to describe here. All languages, ancient and modern, have always had mystical numbers linked to every letter of every alphabet. The numbers are precise, they're mysterious. Some of them are 5,000 years old. They never change, and we're not even sure where they came from. What we're beginning to understand, though, is that those numbers do, in fact, have a basis in what today we're calling the science of chemistry.
That's a big, broad statement. How do you prove it?
Well, which statement?
Well, that all languages...
Sure, they're documented. That's how I have yet to see, from cuneiform to Egyptian hieroglyphs to Phoenician... To Hebrew and Greek and Latin, even English, I have yet to see, and there are books that document, people have spent entire lifetimes researching and documenting these mystical or hidden number equivalents for the ancient alphabets. There is a couple of books out there. One is entitled The Eastern Mysteries, another one The Western Mysteries, by a gentleman, David Allen Hulse, that has documented a number of these, as well as others. There are other books out there. So this tradition was very openly acknowledged and used prior to the advent of Western science about 400 years ago. And in the West, we began to negate those numeric values in the West. People didn't in other cultures and other traditions. They still use them very actively today. And there are rules, very precise rules. In the 2nd century A.D., there was a list of 32 rules that describe precisely how these numbers may be used so that they're not haphazard, so that there is a precision, there is a science to using the numbers in ancient alphabets.
And that comes from what text?
It is called the 32 Rabbinical Rules of the science that we're speaking about is called gematria, G-E-M-A-T-R-I-A, or gematria, or gematria, depending on what part of the world you're studying it from.
Okay.
So, and we documented this in the book. It's on the website as well. So I'm saying this so that we know that the use of numbers and letters interchangeably is nothing new. It's been used by many traditions, much of the world, for much of our history.
Granted.
The last 400 years, we've stopped using
them. Granted. I mean, I agree with you.
Sure.
Certainly, that's true. So
it is. It's with that in mind when we go back and we're looking at the way ancient traditions, specifically traditions such as the Sefer Yetzirah, which is the mystical aspect of the Hebrew Kabbalah, the way it describes the creation of our world and the universe and life, using these letter number combinations, and then other traditions doing the same thing. It's in looking at the links between those letters and those numbers and being able to link those numbers into the periodic table of elements as we describe them today.
All right, and this message that you've deciphered again, God eternal within the body.
Mm-hmm.
We, of course, cannot know if that was placed there by God or by our creators who could be separate but still referencing some greater power.
Precisely, Art. And this is what's so important. We don't know who God is. It doesn't tell us who God is, where God came from. At the very least, what this message says to us, at the very least, it says that we're here on purpose. There's an intentionality underlying the structure of DNA in life as we know it. Number one. Number two, it says that all life that shares that message has a common heritage. So we find bacteria on the surface of Mars or, you know, in the craters of the moon, and it also reads God within the body.
Oh, you've confirmed that.
No, I'm saying if we do. If we do, then it suggests that we have a common heritage. And number three, because we find this message in even the simplest forms of life, in the most ancient forms, it suggests that the intelligence responsible preceded those forms of life.
I'm curious, Greg, if we get to Mars and we get a sample and we read it and it's not in there, what would that say to you?
Well, it depends if it says something else. If the code works the same, and if the message reads differently, what it would suggest is that maybe we don't share that common heritage. It's almost like if you were to come to this world, Art, from another world, and you wanted to find out who these Earth people are, what this Earth life is all about.
Yes.
And you didn't want to disturb them to do it. If you could look into the introduction into the cells of all life, and you could read God eternal within the body, and you say, oh, well, that's the way our DNA reads, then it says that we do, in fact, share a common heritage. If we end up finding some sort of microorganism in another world and it doesn't read the same or the code's different, we'll have to see what that code says to know precisely.
Fascinating. But again, you're telling me that this message, God eternal within the body, was sequenced one after the other. It wasn't every fourth or fifth pick, but it was sequenced all together.
When
convertible numbers to words.
Precisely. When we speak about human DNA or the DNA of what's called carbon-based life, that is life as we typically recognize it here on Earth today,
right.
It is made of four DNA bases that are represented by those letters that we see in all the science fiction movies, C, T, A, and G.
Right.
All those different. There was even a movie that came out a few years ago called Gattaca, G-A-T-T-A-C-A.
I saw it, yes.
Genetic sequence of someone in our future. Those bases that make up all life, it is a combination. Those bases are literally made of the words God within the body, God eternal within the body. So as we are looking at the way that DNA is sequenced, we're looking, it's not that the message is hidden in the DNA, it's that the DNA literally is the message. We are made of these different sequences of God within the body at this uppermost level.
Well, if the pattern is that apparent, that when you sat and looked at the DNA, you said, my God, I see a pattern.
Right.
And then you went from there to where you are now, to having deciphered this message, and it's in every cell, virtually.
Precisely.
Then why has somebody else not, until this moment at least, why has not somebody else come up with it?
You know, I think Paul Davies, the astrobiologist from Sydney, may have said this best, Art. What he's saying is he suggested to a mainstream scientific audience in 2004 that within our DNA would be the perfect place to look for a message from another world or something from our past. He said it would only be when our technology reach the point where we could recognize and translate the message that we could get it.
Same thing they said about the Bible code.
It is. However, and I agree with that to some extent, however, I think the biggest stumbling block is not the technology. It's been around for a while. It's our belief systems. And I think the answer to your question is why we didn't see this before. It's our beliefs. The only way, the experts that I worked with in genetics and microbiology and linguistics, all of them said the same thing to me, Art. They said no one ever told us that we could link alphabets in biology together. So we've never done it. And I think that has been the biggest stumbling block. It's the way we have compartmentalized and separated our world into these little building blocks that we call chemistry and biology and geology so we can study them. now we've isolated them to the point where we don't see how they're related to one another, and that's changing.
Okay, coming back to the message, God eternal within the body. Could it read Buddha eternal within the body? Could it read, you get the idea.
Sure. The what it says, the way the letters come across, literally translates in, it was, first we translate the chemistry into numbers.
Well, you said Yahshua. That's specific.
It is. It's very precise. We translate chemistry into numbers. So hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, carbon, there is one number on the atomic table that links all of those together into the ancient alphabets, and that's what we call atomic mass. So if we'll just step through this step by step. If we convert the elements of life, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, carbon, into atomic mass numbers.
Yes.
And then we take those numbers and we apply the ancient rules of gematria, allowing us to convert those numbers into the digits. So hydrogen becomes a 1, nitrogen becomes a 5, oxygen becomes a 6, carbon becomes a 3. Then we literally go to the tables of the ancient alphabets. And we match those numbers with the letters in the ancient alphabets.
Mm-hmm.
And the only letters that they will match with are the letters that end up spelling out God within the body. So it appears to be very intentional. The letters could have spelled out other words. They could have spelled out something like blue sky, you know, tomorrow or something like that, that really didn't make any sense. But the fact that the letters spell words, number one, and the fact that the words put together have context and meaning adds even greater significance to, statistically, 0.00042% chance.
But I guess I was saying, if it was Yeshua, then it really couldn't be Buddha, could it? Or if it could, how?
Well, it could, from this perspective, it couldn't.
Well, there you are. It couldn't. Thank you.
The translations, I want to be very clear about this. When we're translating into the alphabets precede the tradition. So the alphabet, the Hebrew language, for example, the ancient Hebrew letters, precedes the tradition. If we're going in, those of our listeners who are familiar with the text of the Kabbalah, there are three key books that make up what we call the Kabbalah today. Two of them are very common, have been translated into English frequently, the Midrash and the Zohar. The third book is so mystical, many scholars say don't even bother with it. It's too mystical to even make sense.
Okay, well, there's a question here that I was supposed to ask you,
oh, sure.
Which is, what does the message in ourselves mean to us collectively? Well, here's where I see a stumbling block. If it really says Yahshua, it may not mean anything to us collectively.
Well, this is why I'm saying that the message and the alphabets precede the tradition. It says that the name of God that's encoded in the cells of life is spelled as YAH, which is a form of YHVH or Yahweh.
In
the Hebrew tradition, however, the same name, you find YH. We've done some studies with this. It's common across the Native American traditions. It's common in the traditions of the Aboriginals. You find it running in the sound, Yah, as a sacred sound in the Buddhist and the Hindu traditions. It appears to be almost a universal sound or a universal name. Collectively, what it says to us, it doesn't say who God is or where God came from. Collectively, it tells us we're here on purpose. We have to be, number one. Number two, it says we're part of one another in all life that shares that name, even though we don't know precisely who or what that name means to us right now. My sense is, as we go deeper into the code, if we had this conversation 6 months from now, I think the rest of the code is going to tell us more about who or what God within the body really means to us.
As a matter of interest, how much code remains undecoded?
Well, this is what's interesting, Art, because right now, while we don't know what the deeper layers say to us, I can tell you where the sentences begin and end, and there are literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of letters between the beginning and the end of the sentences.
So in other words, there's plenty of message left.
Well, there is, and this comes back to the correlation to the Bible code. In the earliest versions of the Torah, it's believed that the Torah that Michael Drazen is working with, the Bible code, was received as a continuous string of letters with no punctuation, over 308,000 letters, according to Drazen's work in the Bible code.
So it's Yahweh, not Yeshua, right?
Well, yes, precisely. And the correlation is that it appears that the message in ourselves is also a continuous string of letters that can be converted to numbers into the different alphabets, just the way that the Bible code is as well.
All right, hold it right there. Greg Braden is my guest. Yahweh, huh? So does that cross to all others? No, not necessarily. So it seems awfully conveniently Western. Okay. We'll take that issue up when we get back with Greg Braden in the middle of the night, which is where we do our best work. I'm Art Bell.
2 a.m. Here it comes. Dust to walk.
Code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is. My guest is Greg Braden, and he's a scientist. Now, he's been trained to look for pattern recognition. That is to say, looking at anything and finding within it patterns, things that repeat again and again. And he claims he's found it in our own DNA. Our DNA is, of course, the internal instruction that basically tells our body what to do. And the message is, God eternal within the body. Or the name Yahweh, Yah, the Yah sound, which is apparently, and I'm going to clarify this one more time, but apparently is common throughout the world, the world's religions. And then it also crosses over to speech. In a moment, Greg will be right back. Once again, Greg Braden. Greg, welcome back.
Well, it's a pleasure to be back, Art.
Okay. A couple of things. One, just to be clear, the sound or the name Yahweh or Yah is common throughout the world?
It's common in spiritual traditions throughout the world, from indigenous traditions in the Andes of South America through Buddhist Hindu traditions and certainly throughout the in the Middle East. And it's interesting because the more we share this with audiences throughout the world, the more places people share with me how common this sound actually is.
All right. All right. Now, let's see. Who is this? Let me get the name up here. Ross in Salt Lake City affirms, I think, what you said earlier. Said, since the existence of DNA preceded the existence of any of our alphabets, it's implied by Greg's thesis that formation of our written and spoken languages must be DNA-directed.
There is a link. I don't know that there. It's what I would call directed.
Well, in the way, in the sense that DNA perhaps directs us, for example, to come down with cancer at age 58.
This is
all right, but it doesn't mean it's going to happen. In other words, you may do something that that helps that along.
Well, precisely what it says is that the potential exists within us for the DNA to express in many different ways.
Right.
This is one of the things that's so exciting about this, Art. I just had the opportunity late last year to present this material to a closed conference of military medical personnel. And one of the things that they were excited about, they said, okay, if we can actually translate DNA into text that we read, like the pages of a newspaper,
right,
then does that mean when we find a disease that we don't fully understand, that we can take the DNA from that disease tissue and run it through the algorithm and let the tissue actually tell us what it's expressing? And that is one of the implications. That's precisely what it says.
So you think it could get there?
I believe that's where we're going right now. As we go into the deeper layers, as the algorithm is developed, we'll be able to take the sequence, all the CTAGGATTCAs,
yes,
from any tissue and any body and any life form, run it through the algorithm, and it's going to tell us in the language of our choice, whether it's Hebrew or Arabic or English, what it is that DNA is actually expressing.
All right. When you first said God eternal within the body, you said that. And then later on, twice you repeated God within the body and left out the eternal part.
God and eternal translate the same in the Hebrew language, in the book of the Sefer Yetzirah.
Uh-huh.
So eternal or God, and this is, I want to get back to the question you asked.
So they could be synonymous.
Precisely. Just before the break, we're talking about the scientific implications, and then we've got the cultural implications. From the world of science, it's so interesting to me, because when you go into these ancient traditions and they say that in the beginning, God was the first thing here, God moved across the waters, you know, to a scientist, it makes a scientist crazy because we don't know how that can happen. NASA tells us that 98% of our universe is made of the elements hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, and carbon.
Right.
And now when we translate the DNA in our bodies, the DNA in our body literally translates into the name of God that becomes hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen. So when we look at it from a scientific perspective, when you go back into the old texts, such as the Sefer Yetzirah, the third book of the Kabbalah, what it literally is saying in the beginning, God was hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen, and from that all things were born. And it is saying precisely in the language of another time what Western science has found to be true. So it's the science and the culture, I think, are two different things. We're looking at what the interpretation of the name means to different cultures on the one hand. On the other hand, we're looking at a scientific fact. This message is there.
Greg, then why would not such a message, if it's there, virtually compel us to worship? In other words, at some unconscious genetic level,
right,
we would understand that message, perhaps, and as a result, would worship.
Well, Art, it's a good question. That goes back to the reason that I began looking for this back in the 1980s. This is the last years of the Cold War. One of the most frightening times in the history of our world for those working behind the scenes.
Yes.
We know how close we came to just doing the unthinkable. and pushing that button. There was a census. It was conducted in the year 2000, believed to be the most accurate in all of history. And what it said is of the 6.2 billion people in our world, 95% of us already believe in the existence of a higher power. 95% of the world believe there's something else out there and that we're part of something. Over one half call that something God. So to me, it made tremendous sense. If I'm looking for a principle of unity that tells us that we're greater than the differences that almost destroyed us in the 80s, that we might find that in something that we already believe in.
Well, I'm perfectly willing then to believe that this message translates to some perhaps very unconscious, very primal, very DNA-like message.
I believe it does. If we already believe there's something out there, and this is, I've had the opportunity, Art, in the last couple of years I've been on every continent of the earth, with the exception of Antarctica. We haven't done any book tours in Antarctica. And what people have said to me, either directly or through the translators, they're not surprised by this message. There's always been a sense that something like this exists. What is exciting to them is that once we see the methodology, we can't argue that it's there. We don't know why it's there or how it got there.
Well, what you mean, we, Tonto? Now, that's going to be a very important point. You have found this.
Mm-hmm.
How much cooperation has there been from peers, you know, peer review? How many other people have looked at this?
Okay, I am no, and I'll be the first to say this right off. I said it earlier in the program. I'm no expert in genetics, microbiology, or linguistics. I've worked in those fields enough to know how they interact and to be able to do what I've done. Once I had begun the work with this message, I had to seek out experts in the field to either validate or shoot the holes in the places where I was wrong.
So you had to show it to others and?
Sure. I had to show it to others to validate or confirm what was happening. And what's so interesting is once the book went out for review and it went out to academic institutions, it went out to theologians, throughout the world, there was no argument over whether or not the message is there following the methodology.
I guess what I'm asking is, was the methodology affirmed as solid?
Yes, the methodology is solid. What has never been done and where the controversy comes from is we've never mixed science and spirituality or ancient languages and the periodic table of elements together before. That is a very different way of looking.
But from what I understand, you've told me so far, you don't really need the spirituality to come to this conclusion.
No.
You come to this scientifically, yes?
That's correct. The spirituality comes from the fact that they are spiritual texts, such as the Sefer Yetzirah.
Well, that's fine.
And
that doesn't bother me. What bothers me is that there was no, okay, here's what I believe, so we'll make this mean that. There was none of that baloney in there. This is just pattern recognition.
Yeah, we're just following numbers. We're linking the numbers when we convert
exactly
the DNA into numbers, and we match those numbers with the numbers of the ancient alphabets. We plug in letters where the numbers used to be and say, tell me what this says. This is what it says.
So then why not see a link to both written and spoken languages? Wouldn't it be almost a natural thing?
I think it would be. And I think that if we were to carry this along that path of investigation, that may be precisely what we found. This opens the door, Art, to a vast array of possibilities. The implications are so vast in terms, I mean, we could spend the evening talking about evolution, the implications of in biology, what does it mean for theology, you know, whose God is it, where does that God come from? And all those are valid. Where does language come from? All those are valid. For me, personally, this began as a search for a unifying principle of peace because my sense is if we don't find that peace in the next 10 to 15 years, the other things aren't going to make much difference anyway.
So you mean the realization that this exists would be unifying?
Carl Sagan, before he died in 1996, he was testifying before the Senate with regard to his project SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
Right.
they ask him, they said, Dr. Sagan, why should we fund this project? Although it's interesting, of what good is it really if we found a signal from somewhere in space telling us we're part of a greater existence? And Sagan, he said, even if we didn't find the signal, he said, the search itself, he said, is a cohesive experience, bridging the differences for the whole of the human condition, just looking. If we ever found anything, if the search were fruitful, it could strengthen the bonds that join all human and other beings on the planet, is what Dr. Sagan said. In a very real sense, we haven't found a signal from space. We found a message embedded into life itself. My sense is that as we go deeper into the message, and once we understand really the implications of what this all is all about, it's not that it changes the world, Art. It gives us a reason. It's a place to begin. It gives us a reason.
It would change the world. If the world suddenly realized that there was an unambiguous, real message in our own DNA that there is God, eternal, read the same, within our body, if that message really existed, that certainly would change the world.
I would like to think.
In many good ways.
I would like to think that possibility exists. What many people have said is it's such a short message. Isn't there more? Well, to me, that's like saying we only found one temple on Mars. It is a short message.
No, this will do.
And there's more. And as we go into... I debated... This breakthrough came in 2001, and I debated whether or not...
To hold off?
To share it now, or to hold off until we had deeper layers. And where we were after 9/11 and in 2001, I chose to go forward with this part of the work. Because it takes, as you know, it takes a year, year and a half, 2 years for a new way of looking at things to really take hold and for people to really grasp the significance.
Greg, who has looked at your methodology?
Well, it's gone to the universities. It's gone to that the publisher sent it out to. It's gone to other peers, other researchers. I've had letters from everything from rabbis to Catholic priests to anthropologists and scientists. They each interpret it differently to mean something different from their walk of life. But what they're saying is, the letters say, Greg, we can't say why this message is there, but if we do what you just did, the message exists. It's there.
If we do what you just did,
Sure, I shared it in the book. I mean, you can do it on a paper napkin at your kitchen table with your family and friends. Once you understand how this works, there are no secrets. I wanted everyone to see.
All right, listen, you've got a website, don't you?
Pardon me?
A website.
Yes, I do.
Do you lay out how somebody can come to the same conclusion and use your methodology and come to the same place?
It's not. That particular page is not on the website. It is in the book. It's not on the website right now.
Okay.
As we go into the deeper layers of the code, however, I will share that on the website as soon as we know and I can confirm what that is, because my sense is that the significance of that message is something that we all would like to see as quickly as possible.
If you were to speculate, which you probably won't, but if you were to even guess about what might lie ahead in the rest of the message, what do you think it might be?
I think we're going to know more about what God within the body means to us, and how we may apply that, how we can use it in our lives. I think it's interesting, Art. We are living at this time. Again, I'm going to quote Sagan again. He called this a time of technological adolescence. It's a time when we have at our fingertips the power to preserve or destroy all that we cherish as a civilization. We are now engaged in the largest nuclear proliferation since the time of the Cold War.
That's right.
When over a half of the world's nations are engaged in armed conflict right now, battling over ideas. These aren't wars between countries. They're wars between ideas.
That's correct.
And I think we cannot overlook the significance. Finding a message in the cells of all life within the context of where we are at this time in history, I think it's no coincidence that we're finding this now.
What would Islam say and find about all of this?
Well, I've spoken with Islamic scholars, and they're saying the same thing. They're saying we don't know why it's there. It is not in conflict with anything that is in their tradition right now. because, and this is one of the beauties of the Hebrew language, Art, that the message was first translated into Biblical Hebrew before it was anything else, because Biblical Hebrew is the one language that links the spiritual traditions of over half of the world's population. Islam, Jewish, and Christian traditions are 3 billion people in those traditions are linked through the Hebrew alphabet in the Old Testament prophet Abraham. That's where those records are first recorded in the Hebrew language. So that Hebrew language plays a key role in over half of the world's population.
So it would change the world then, Greg. In other words, if Islam realized that they had the same message in their cells that we do, they might look at us, even the extremists, in perhaps a different way than we have to be eradicated like an anthill.
They could, because once the message was translated into, first DNA was converted to numbers, and then numbers were linked to the alphabets. The first alphabet was Hebrew, boom, there it was. The next alphabet was Arabic. So ancient Arabic, and it reads the same. The letters read the same. So the message is the same in the languages of both of those people. It's not that it reads one way in Arabic and another way in Hebrew. It's the same letters, the same message. It reads the same, interestingly.
When did your book come out?
The book was released just a year ago. It's only been out a year. It went paperback in February of 05. It was released in February of 04.
Well, a year ago is plenty of time for there to have been reaction.
And there has been. There has been the academic circles. We've had very little controversy regarding the message itself. The controversy has been
methodology,
how it got there, who put it there, and what does it mean?
What about controversy with regard to the methodology?
I've had very little controversy with regard to the methodology once the documentation for gematria is brought into play.
All right, hold it right there. We're at the bottom of the hour. And so if there's little controversy about the methodology used and the message is clear, then, well, then what are we waiting for? Because we're all connected in the very same way.
Code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is. My guest is Greg Braden, and I must admit, I find this absolutely fascinating. The whole concept is fascinating. If the methodology is sound, and so far it would seem to be, and the message is really there in our DNA, that message being God or eternal, God eternal within the body, then that would seem so clear and nearly so universal that its acceptance, underline that word, very important, would change the world. This may not be a good analogy, but there are some people who, if asked to look at a cloud formation, they'll look up and they'll say, I see a woman with big breasts. And then another cloud formation will eventually come, and you'll say, look up, and what do you see in that one? Well, I see a woman, what, even bigger breasts. So it may not be the proper way to approach this, but you're sure, Greg, that you're not just seeing what you want to see or finding what you want to find. In other words, that you found some way to find what you want to find.
Well, I want to know where these clouds are you're looking at. What we've done, I've had to be very clear. That's one of the reasons we did the translation in 01. I didn't publish until 04, just to be very certain. Because I recognize the implications and also the responsibility that comes from saying to audiences all over the world, there's a message in the cells of your body.
Yes.
One of the things that was the reason that we were able to do with this information, what we did, is that I applied the same principles to modern science that we've used in ancient wisdom, and I applied the same principles in ancient wisdom that we've used in modern science. I treated the old and the new ways of knowing equally. We gave them the same consideration, the same weight.
All right.
So we treated the ancient letters like we would the periodic table of elements, and we treated the periodic table of elements, those numbers, just like we would those ancient letters.
All right.
And when we do that, it's kind of like it's kind of like equalizing two very different kinds of information.
All right.
Marrying them into a greater wisdom than each of them contains individually.
All right. Art in Brooklyn, New York says, the God code is fascinating, but it's not going to change or inform the minds of those who simply refuse to see it. After all, many people are blinded by their religion, so blinded that they just block it right off.
Well, and that's certainly true. My role is not to persuade or convince anyone of anything. What I'm doing is I'm saying this is what we've found so far. My experience, Art, as I've traveled the world these last few years, is the world is ready to change. People would like to change, and before they put the effort into making a change, they need a good reason to think of themselves differently.
Mm-hmm.
A message in the cells of all life.
Would be that.
That excludes no one, regardless of lifestyle or heritage or borders or bloodlines. The message is the same for everyone. Now, one step further, and this ties into programs that you and I have done in past years. Between 1993 and the year 2000, Western scientists under laboratory conditions confirmed the existence of an intelligent field of energy that links all of creation. We know that field is out there on the quantum level. Some scientists call it the quantum hologram. Some call it the mind of God. Stephen Hawking calls it the mind of God.
Mm-hmm.
Former Apollo astronaut Ed Mitchell calls it nature's mind.
Mm-hmm.
Through this field, experiments have shown that a relatively few people can adopt a way of feeling or a belief system, and the whole begins to benefit from that. For example, studies were done in the Middle East in the Lebanese-Israeli War, early 1980s, when X number of people were trained to feel peace and strategically placed in the war-torn areas. While they were feeling peace, the terrorist activities dropped to zero and crimes against people declined. Traffic accidents declined, and when they stopped, all those statistics reversed. And there's actually a formula that tells how many people are required to bring about change in a given area.
I'm absolutely convinced that is so.
Sure. So as and so in response to the comment from New York, it's not that everyone has to adopt the same belief system. Relatively few people can begin to think of ourselves differently, and others begin to respond to that. And we need a reason to think of ourselves differently.
All right. You have or know something about a discovery of an advanced civilization.
Oh, you're reading my mind.
In northern... No, I'm not. I'm reading it from the paper. In northern India, that appears to have been destroyed by technology over 5,000 years ago. You were earlier talking about the possibility of our destroying ourselves, and clearly we're rapidly with nanotechnology and biotechnology, all the rest of it. Forgetting the nuclear aspect for a moment, we certainly could destroy ourselves. And you're saying that you know of a civilization that did.
Well, you know, it's not just me that knows it, Art. When you go into the cultures of these countries where they're finding this evidence, they know it. They talk about it all the time. We simply in the West, here in North America and Western Europe, simply don't acknowledge these discoveries.
What discoveries? What evidence?
This particular discovery, it's in the Rajasthan province of northern India, northwestern India, and part of what is now Pakistan, before the division occurred back in 1948. There is an area there that's always had high numbers of birth defects and cancers. No one really understood why. Interestingly enough, the Indian government decided to build public housing in this area. And when they began the excavations, back in the early part of the 20th century, they began finding the remains of highly advanced, highly sophisticated archaeological evidence of advanced, sophisticated cities that no one knew about, and these were really beautifully laid out cities. They had hot and cold running water. They had closed sewage systems. They had the cities were built out on grids based on the number 108 and multiples of that. Highly advanced art and a language that to this day, to the best of my knowledge, has not even been translated. We cannot translate this language.
What about evidence of actual technology, beyond, for example, even running water? Any evidence of modern technology, what we know of today?
Well, the cities are so old that what they're finding there, they're between 5,000 and 8,000 years old. And I was just in India in January of this last year, 04, and this is now closed off to the public because it is a radioactive area. One of the things that they began to find, Art, was sheets of sand in the desert fused into glass from a rapid, intense heat.
Huh.
They found vitrified walls and vitrified floors where they're still in place. Stone walls and floors are in place, but the minerals in the walls have been melted because of a rapid and very intense heat. Skeletons. Human skeletons in the streets are running from something. Some of them are still holding hands. And they began finding radioactive skeletons. And these were found back in as early as the 60s. They weren't reported until the 90s. And a lot of Russian archaeologists were involved in this
That's
area.
Incredible, all right. A question for you, Greg.
Yeah.
Think of our modern civilization, our modern world. Our cities, New York, L.A., Chicago, are monuments to modern technology. If we had a full-scale nuclear war right now, this moment, and the world became bereft of humans, and then we came back and looked in another 5 or 10,000 years, would all the signs of our current civilization be nothing but radioactive dust, identifiable, not past perhaps a few pipes for water?
Well, I think it's a good question. I mean, if you go to a mall in a large city and think of it 5,000 years from now, the glass is going to be gone, the metal structure holding up the walls is going to be gone, the marble floors will be there, just as we find in these ancient civilizations. In other
sure.
words, a lot of the things that we look for to define civilization would deteriorate within 5,000 to 8,000 years.
Gone to the degree that you're describing in India?
Well, I think certainly. I mean, the glass is going to disappear. Sheetrock's going to disappear. Plastics aren't going to be around. You're going to find the naturally occurring materials, stone that we're using for pipes or clay, things like that, the clay vessels, the clay vases, things like that. The question is, what happened to this civilization in India that destroyed it so completely we didn't even know it?
Well, your implication is clear that there was some sort of nuclear conflict. I mean, sand into glass.
Well, we don't know that.
Well, you did say radioactive areas.
It is. It's radioactive. And what's interesting is scholars, up until the mid-20th century, there was nothing in technology that could describe what they found. On the one hand, on the other hand, in this part of the world, there are traditions that have always held that there was an ancient battle that occurred in that part of the world that nobody won, and that the battle, when you read the translations in the text of the Mahabharata, for example, a 100,000-line text that describes this battle, and it talks about the waters boiling and elephants bursting into flames when they walked across the sands and birds turning to ash and falling from the sky.
Sounds like nuclear conflict to me, or a nuclear accident, or who knows.
It's the only thing that we know right now. And the question is, if something like this happened 5,000 to 8,000 years ago, can we learn from our past? And are we making the same mistakes again?
Well, wasn't it Einstein who said he didn't know about the Third World War, but the Fourth would be fought with sticks and stones?
Yeah. A growing number of scientists now are looking, including Nobel Prize-winning scientists, are looking at whatever it is that happened in the plains of Rajasthan, and they're saying, wait a minute, is it possible that some form of atomic energy has been in our world before? And if so, it behooves us to look at this and see and understand what happened. It was so interesting to me. People in India know about this. People in this country who were born in India say, oh, yeah, you know, people talk about it all the time. It's just something that hasn't been, I don't know why it hasn't made the front page of archaeological journals, you know, all over the world. But and it's not the only place where you find things like this. But this is one that is, it is relatively recent.
All right. As you were putting your book together, they discovered the Dead Sea Scrolls, right?
Mm, yes.
And in what way does it correlate? Does it correlate? What do you know?
Well, the scrolls, we've written about the scrolls extensively in past books, and they're still a source of fascination to me. They're of the 900 scrolls that were eventually pieced together from those 1,100 caves back in the 1940s, there were always fragments of the scrolls that were laying on the floors of the caves. They couldn't be linked to any one scroll, and no one knew what to do with them, and they waited until the year 2002 to compile these fragments separately. And it was while I was writing this book, The God Code, that one of those fragments, they released the publication, and one of those fragments actually showed the name that we're talking about in the cells of our bodies. As a single fragment that was left in the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's the ancient name of God. Maybe one of the oldest written versions that we find. What's so interesting, this name that's in our cells, the name Yah or Yahweh, in the traditions of present-day Hebrew traditions, it's a name that is not to be written in its entirety or even spoken. However, if you go back far enough in history, the name was written and it was spoken, and these scrolls were from a time far enough back before they started replacing the name in the text that was actually written out. So we can actually see that this name, it's from a 2,500-plus-year-old year-old scroll. So the name that we find in our cells is inscribed on this tiny fragment. All by itself, it stands alone. There are no other words or letters around it. It's just the standalone name. The ancient name of God.
Obviously you're on this talk program, but this is not going to imprint the message around the world. What's it going to take to do that? I mean, to accomplish what you hope for this?
Well, the book right now, the book has been out only a year, and my experience are new ideas. It takes a year or so to really, really grab hold. The book now is in 15 different languages. We just 2 weeks ago completed a 90-minute documentary broadcast. It'll be shown for broadcast on science stations and things like that, that were really, I think, in a very lay person format.
Good.
Translate this message. It can be a little technical. It doesn't have to be. That's my learning. I'm still learning the language to convey the implications of what we found here. And so in something that the average non-technical person can grasp very quickly, this the documentary should be available within within about 2 months.
Well, that's important. All right. Look, when normally when the NSA, for example, breaks a code, a very tough code, you know, the crays have to go to work on it for a long time, whatever it is these days we do, and we break a very tough code, then we can read the whole message quite easily. And so my question is, now you apparently have broken the code, or at least sufficiently to get this part of the message. What's the holdup then if you've broken the code in quickly decoding the rest?
Art, this is what is so fascinating. Who or whatever is responsible for this code apparently wanted to make really certain that we understand, whoever's reading this message, that we understand the unity of nature, because each layer has a separate code to translate that layer.
So you've got to break additional codes for each message?
Each layer, precisely.
Each layer. Aye, aye, aye.
However, because now that we understand more or less how we know that these are linked to the periodic table, and in the first layer, the atomic mass number was the number of the elements that linked it to the alphabet. The second layer, we know that it is linked to the periodic table in a slightly different way. So it's just in redefining the way we think of language and the way we think of science and the elements. It's allowing science to be a language.
Is it possible then that the second layer and the third layer and so forth may be in areas of understanding beyond your ability to be the code breaker?
Precisely. I think all I have done is open the doorway to show the benefit of what happens when we allow ourselves to cross those traditional boundaries. When we can get beyond our own limitations of our own beliefs, it opens the door to a whole new way of knowing. And I would be the first to acknowledge that there are in areas and in fields that I have no expertise in. In other areas, I am well-versed in them, so we'll see where that leads us. And that's why I'm so willing to bring in experts in other fields.
Then you've got to create enough excitement to bring in other areas of expertise and to continue the process.
We have what I would call a small virtual team of people. I work full-time on this when I am not touring and meeting my other obligations and commitments. I have a small team of experts in the fields of microbiology, genetics, and linguistics that are willing to take what I've done and apply their specific areas of expertise to tell me if it's valid or not.
Do you need mathematicians or?
No, the math is so simple, Art. That's the simplest part right now. It's in rethinking the way that we've always believed that the DNA structure works. We can think of DNA literally as a three-dimensional map.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way Drosnin's looking at the Torah, it's the same thing. A continuous string of characters with no punctuation, and every one of those characters can be converted into a number, and every one of those numbers can be converted into a letter.
And I believe you said that every known language can, when written, can be converted to meaningful numbers.
I have yet to see a language. I was surprised. This is one of the places when I was writing the book, it came to a screeching halt, and I said, hey, I never knew that. And I took some time to investigate and speak to the linguists who have dedicated their lives to researching what are called the mystical or the hidden or the secret number codes of alphabets, and every alphabet has one.
All right. I think we've laid this out sufficiently well. What I'd like to do is allow the audience at you coming up, all right?
Sure.
It'll be fascinating to see what they have to say. Greg Braden is my guest. He'll relax for a moment. You will prepare your questions. Call, and of course, when you get on the air, turn your radios down, right? From the high desert, the middle of the night, the darkness. This is Coast to Coast AM. Good morning.
talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Good morning, everybody. Patrick in Lafayette, Louisiana says, "Hey, Art, I thought the Bible code was amazing, but this takes the cake. If this is completely true, this DNA code will change people. It'll make people that don't believe in God believe. This code can change the world, connect people." Patrick in Lafayette, Louisiana. I suppose if everybody bought it, if everybody believed it, if everybody understood it, it would in fact do that. We'll be right back.
Experts.
I'll tell you, it would indeed change the world, wouldn't it? But you see, we have these people that, these fanatics who believe what they believe, and they are so very dedicated to their belief, and the fact that we don't share it with them, that they're willing to kill themselves and take us with them. I wonder if there's any way, Greg, that you can envision this message could be taken to those who wish us such ill.
My sense is, Art, that based on what we know about the field that connects all things, the way it connects all things, it's not that they have to be convinced of anything. I've seen under laboratory conditions, we've seen the experiments in major U.S. cities, when a certain number of people shift the way that they feel about themselves and their world, the whole benefits from that, because we're all linked into the same field. We're all linked into the same consciousness. This is what the studies at Princeton University were all about, GCP, Global Consciousness Project.
Right. I'm watching that like a hawk.
Mm.
And that's kind of what allows me to buy into the whole thing, really, you know, in a lot of ways. I'm beginning, I think, to grasp and understand this universal consciousness that seems connected, absolutely connected. That's all there is to it. I've seen it work. I've seen it happen. I've seen it demonstrated. It seems real. So you're saying that once this is understood by enough people, it will be shared at a level that we don't exactly understand yet, but nevertheless shared.
Maybe not even on a conscious level.
Yeah.
One of the things that studies have shown, Art, is we seem to be at our best when something unites us. And in the past, it's always been a tragedy. When there's a tragedy, we seem to break down those barriers that have separated us in the past, and we work together towards a greater good. My question writing the book is, does it have to be a tragedy that brings us together? Can there be a piece of information that is so empowering and so fresh and holds such a possibility that maybe it has the same effect? And
it's
if so,
good question.
Could a message in ourselves have that effect?
Right. First-time caller line.
Good morning, Greg.
Calling from Alaska. Hi, Greg. Yeah. Boy, you're after my heart here. I've been studying this for 35 years, and I came upon it upon a life-death experience 35 years ago, and I laid there for 3 hours in a cardiac arrest just seeing the parable of the Bible and what it means. And now is the time that it's meant to be released.
Mm.
I believe that intensely, but I see the simplistic side. You see the more of a complex side. I look at the Bible as no more than an owner's manual to the temple of God, which is you, and we are the greatest riddle upon the face of the planet. And we're just beginning to... I can go on and on and on here, and I'd really like to get your number and talk to you in depth more after.
Well, I don't know that we can arrange that for you, but we can arrange perhaps a way to contact Greg Braden now. Greg, you've got a website. Obviously, there's going to be some way to contact you. Do you want to give out your email?
Sure. Well, it's on the website, gregbraden.com.
Right.
Greg with two G's, and there's contact information on there. I'm on the road, so it all goes through my office in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
All right. All right, so if they want to get in touch with you, go to gregbraden.com. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Oh, no, wait. It says www.gregbraden.net.
Either one.
Oh, either one.
Either one goes, we've got them all going to the same place.
All right, www.gregbraden.net.
My sense is, Art, as we get into deeper layers of the code, we're going to see that owner's manual in a way that that may be even clearer than we've ever seen it before, encoded right into the creation itself.
Once again, you wouldn't like to speculate on what's to come, would you?
My sense is that I think we're going to find a replica of some of our most cherished textual traditions encoded into the cells of our bodies, including some of the papyrus that we found in Egypt, the actual language of those, the mystical language that we've seen as the basis of those traditions. I wouldn't be surprised to see them encoded into the cells of all life.
You don't suppose they might find what was inscribed on tablets as well as now cells, do you?
It's a possibility, and I'll just be very, very clear, Art. I haven't seen that yet, so I don't want to imply that I have. But
no, I asked you for speculation.
Sure. Well, when I'm looking for patterns, what we find is the same number of letters in very specific portions of those texts we find in very specific places in the codes of ourselves. So it's interesting that the number of letters are there, that many of the numbers translate the same, though they have not been translated into the text as of yet.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Greg Braden. Hi.
Hi, this is Vinny from Avon Lake, WTAM.
Yes, Vinny.
And I think that if his research is going to be confirmed, he's making the fuel for two very controversial fires. First of all, Darwinism.
Where'd he go?
Okay.
Where'd you go, buddy? Let's try it again. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, you are there. Good.
Yeah,
got
can
cut
you
off
me?
For a moment. Yes.
Okay. The theory of creation versus Darwinism. Right now there's a Board of Education controversy in Kansas, and a bunch of scientists are boycotting the hearing because their hearts are set on Darwinism, you know.
Yes.
And the other thing is genetic engineering, and Greg is feeding fuel to the fire of, I don't know, you could call it blasphemy to be tampering with our genetic code. So I was wondering if he'd care to comment on either of those issues.
Let's tackle both. Sure. You know, the whole evolution creation thing.
Well, first of all, this is one of the reasons, again, the code, I translated the first part of this code in 01. I went through some personal things, as you can imagine, processes, in coming to terms with how I wanted to release it.
Yeah, I bet.
And the best way to do this, I had people ask me to do it as a very technical white paper that would have been reviewed for six-plus years. Others said just write a book. I took a middle of the road. The white paper is still being developed. Both of those, both Darwinism, creationism, I address in the book, as well as many other implications, and I'm acknowledging they're all there. For me, I'm simply sharing what I found, and I'm saying this is an unprecedented principle of unity, and that's my focus.
But it would conclusively point to intelligent design.
Precisely. And this is, when we go back into Darwin's work, so many people like to quote Darwin as being in favor of his own theories. And in fact, in his book, Origin of Species, he questioned his own theories. He said, even I believe that the complexity of life is almost too great to have come purely from natural selection. And he uses the example of an eye, where he says to assume that the eye arose purely by natural selection, his term is absurd. He said there's something else going on. Darwin said that himself. So people like to quote Darwin to support their theories of evolution, when in fact Darwin was very open when he said there's probably something else going on. Francis Crick says the same thing.
All right. Now we have decoded our genetic mystery. And we're now on the edge of tampering with our genetic mystery. And if, in fact, it is, as you suggest, written by our designer, then our tampering with that message, well, I don't know. It just would seem inadvisable. The caller used the word blasphemy.
Well, what will be interesting, Art, is when we can actually take the entire code as it becomes translated into text, and when we go about splicing a piece here or splicing a piece there to see what it actually says to the text, I think we'll have the answer to what we're asking. But the flip side of this is what the military medical personnel were asking me. They're saying, can we take tissue, convert that tissue, the DNA in that tissue, into a sequence so the tissue can actually tell us what it's expressing, what the cancer is saying or what the Down syndrome is saying to us? And if we are artificially doing this, then we're going to be able to answer our own question. We're going to see what sentence we're writing back to our bodies, and if it makes sense to do that or not.
So maybe they'll take the cancer out, examine it, take the code, apply it, and it'll say something like, I told you not to smoke.
Well, the implications, I mean, we can intuit what our bodies are saying, and we can read the chemical codes of what our bodies are saying. But
just, yes.
I mean, think if we could actually communicate with diseased tissue through the language of English or whatever language we convert it into, so that we can actually have a two-way conversation with our bodies. I mean, the implications are just mind-boggling.
Talking to tissue. All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Greg Braden. Good morning.
Yes, hi, Greg.
Good morning.
First thing I'd like to say is God bless you for what you're doing.
Well, it's good for me to hear that this morning. Thank you. I appreciate it.
And I got so excited I called one of the ministries about this. I mean, I'm just jumping up and down over this. And, you know, I've been with Jesus himself, and I'll tell you what, he loves us so much. And he would want us to know this. And I think this is his way. I think what Art said, you are going to change the world with this.
Well, we'll give people a reason to change. I know that. I appreciate your support this morning. Well,
yes, so do I. Very interesting stuff. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Greg Braden. Hi.
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 West of the Rockies?
Yes.
Oh, hi. This is Alwyn from Roanoke Park.
Yes.
Hi, Art. Hi, Greg.
Good morning.
Well, I am so glad to talk to you.
Well, I'm happy to hear your voice. You have a question for me this morning.
I have two things I want to run by you. I wanted to ask you. First of all, are you aware, well, this is what I believe. I have been doing research on the symbol of the twin snakes and the caduceus and how it relates to our DNA, the symbol of our DNA, the strands.
Sure.
And I believe that we've known since the beginning of time about the sacredness of DNA or the sacredness in symbolism.
Mm.
And because it's everywhere in ancient times, and we've never really been able to figure out exactly what they were saying with all of these snakes and finding Western civilization demonized snakes, so we didn't get very far, I don't think. And I was going to ask you what your opinion is about that. Somehow it was instilled in us somewhere along the line, just as a symbol before language, as something sacred. And, hello?
Yeah, sorry.
And were you aware of that?
Well, certainly.
I thought maybe you might be. But the other thing I wanted to ask you about, you know, first of all, I will say this, and I think you'll agree with me. God reveals, and God reveals in his time what we need to know, and he's revealing God. And I think what you're doing is wonderful. And I wanted to ask you something about Genesis 1 and 2, where God says he created he male and she female in his own image. And then in Genesis 2, he forms them, the male and female, and they're separate there. But then he says, the man shall leave his family and cleave to his wife, and they shall be as one.
Ma'am, I don't think Greg Braden is a biblical expert.
No.
If you want to comment on this, Greg.
Well, I wanted to ask him if he thought that was a representation of mankind being together as one.
All right. Hold it right there.
Three questions there.
Yeah.
So first the symbols, universal symbols for DNA. You know, we are just getting ready to go back into Tibet. We're in those 1,500-year-old monasteries. They teach an entire medical system based on 70 drawings that have been around since who knows when.
Right.
And in those drawings, they're showing DNA as the double strands. We find it on the temples in Egypt. I know other guests have talked about this. All through the desert southwest. It is a universal symbol, and it seems that that we have known of this form for a long time, and it has been symbolized in a number of ways. When we get into the question about the book of Genesis, our Western biblical text, the best scholars will openly admit, is incomplete at best. It's been edited a number of times. And we go back to the original text, the Gnostic texts, the text from the Mandaeans, for example, the Gnostic sect that has survived in the modern times, where we see in a paragraph or two, they offer in page after page after page that describes the creation of our bodies separately from the creation of our souls, and in man and woman being created equally simultaneously. And maybe this is one of the reasons why that book was edited so heavily by the early church in the 4th century.
And together as one?
Together as one, precisely. In the Mandaean texts, in the Gnostic texts, in the beginning, what it says is that Adam and his female counterpart were created simultaneously and knew one another essentially as brother and sister and were not drawn to one another. And it was only when Adam was put into what they call the deep sleep, and he awoke and beheld the beauty of Eve, the second female counterpart, that he was drawn to her. Our text, as good as it is, and our biblical text is good, it simply is highly condensed, takes all that and describes it in a couple of sentences.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Greg Braden. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Bell. I have two questions, if time allows, for Greg.
All right.
Greg, this is Blair in Sedona, Arizona. How you doing?
Well, good morning. I'm doing well. Thank you.
You know, humanity is supposed to know thyself, and we do this through time. Jose Arguelles, the Mayan Factor author, sort of says that time is like a form of information biology. You know, in other words, Greg, time informs life. You know, the word inform is to place the form within. So from the form within, like from the inside out, we live and externalize that form. And you basically said that earlier with the God code. And my question to you, the first question, is how does time work as a factor for the God code?
Okay. And there's a second question?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
Well, the second question has to do with sacred geometry and the structure of our consciousness and how we can, you know, the Drumvelo Melchizedek flower of life situation where consciousness is actually takes shapes and forms and how we actually will change our consciousness when we change our shapes and forms.
Sure. Well, I'll answer the second one first.
Okay.
Dr. John Wheeler from Princeton University, he was a contemporary of Einstein's, he's still with us today, is offered what to Western science is a radical new concept of consciousness. And what he's saying is that it is consciousness that actually is creating our universe. He says we're living in what we call a participatory universe where we may never find the edge of creation because every time we look, consciousness places something there for us to see. Every time we look to find the smallest particle of creation, we'll never find it because the act of looking is the act of creation, of putting something there for us to see. So this is a consciousness creating through the form that we call geometry, and life is where the sacred aspect of that comes from, the sacred geometry.
All right, I think the other question was on time.
Sure, Jose Arguelles, I'm very familiar with his work. He's a neighbor of ours just up in Colorado. We live in northern New Mexico. His relationship, biology and time, are closely intertwined. And I think it may answer one of the questions that came up earlier in our evening this evening. Why now? Why would we find this information now? Why didn't we find it 50 years ago or 30 years ago? And I think it's because precisely where we are in our technological adolescence that Carl Sagan defined. We've tapped the forces of nature. We now have the ability to preserve or destroy all that we cherish as a civilization.
Yes.
And within that context, we now have a key that says the reasons we've destroyed one another in the past, based on our differences, those reasons are now obsolete. Will we embrace that message? And I think that's the question that time is asking us.
All right. Well, time relates in another way. We're breaking here, Greg, but I think it's a race, you know, a kind of a race between the possible self-annihilation that technology would allow, and the realization, the universal realization of the message that you bring tonight, the God Code, as it were. It's a race. Which one gets here first? And if you look around you today, all around you, Iraq and the rest of the world, which side right now do you think is winning that race? Think about it during the break. That's the race. On the one side, we've got God eternal within the body, perhaps somewhat as yet unrealized. And on the other side, we've got war, which in this modern technological age means the end of all.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and if that's the race, well, as you look around the world right now, if you answer absolutely honestly, which side do you think is winning right now? My guest is Greg Braden. His book is The God Code, The Secret of Our Past, The Promise of Our Future. Well, I wonder if it's a promise. Greg, as I mentioned, we're in a race. I think you would agree with that, acknowledging the possibility of blowing ourselves to smithereens. So if you consider that we're in that race and you look around the world right now, how are we doing?
Well, I'm going to preface my answer by saying I'm an optimist, Art, and you know that from talking to me in the past. I had this conversation with an Air Force colonel on a flight that I took just within the last few weeks. He ended up sitting next to me on the plane. We had 3 hours to talk about precisely what we're talking about now. And what we both found is that there are two very different ways that are unfolding right now of trying to achieve the same goal. There's a military solution to try to achieve peace. And there are people changing consciousness to try to achieve peace, and they're both playing out simultaneously. And the possibility came to me that maybe the way we've always tried to achieve peace in the past, through war, maybe what we're doing, and I'm not saying it's right, wrong, good, or bad, or that I agree or disagree, but it may be that we've bought ourselves some time using the old ways of doing it, allowing the new ways to become firmly anchored in place, and that there's a convergence point where these two meet. And I think we're defining that time right now. It's a different way of thinking about it, isn't it?
It is indeed. and also somewhat evasive.
Well, I think, but I'm encouraged by some things. You can't base it on what we see in the news, because the news focuses only on certain...
The negative.
Yeah,
I'll
only on the negative. There are a lot of very good things. I'm seeing people all over the world people in every nation, people are ready for peace. They're ready for more than the war and the suffering in the 20th century. The thinking is out there. I think it's within a relatively small number, a handful of people that are still trying to achieve peace through the old methods of war. And I think that as consciousness changes, just like the Berlin Wall fell, just like the thinking in our world, in our country, changed so quickly just a couple of years ago, I think it can happen that quickly. I think we're going to wake up one morning and we're going to say, you know, this war just doesn't make any sense any longer. War in general. Half of the world's nations are involved in armed conflict.
That'll be an interesting day, Greg.
It will. Let's do a program that day.
Yeah. First time caller line, you're on the air with Optimist Greg Braden.
Hi, Art and Greg.
Hi.
Morning.
I have tracked down an amazing Chinese medical doctor who's in China and Russia at times, who has discovered something absolutely incredible about the nature of DNA. He has found that DNA is only a cassette with recorded information whose actual material carriers are bioelectromagnetic signals. And basically, the electromagnetic field and the DNA together make up combined genetic material, one being the DNA, which is passive, and the other being the transmitting form, which is able to modify it.
Well, then what are all those damn electric lines doing to us?
But then he's gone on to prove it. He developed a Star Trek-like technology that's a 9-foot diameter copper or gold, either one, sphere, which is also known as a cabinet, that you step into, and there's a place for a recipient to sit and a place to put a donor. And he used his dad, who was 80 years old at the time, as a recipient, and he used a young, healthy mouse as the donor. And his father's a tooth that had fallen out 20 years ago just sprouted out of his bone in his jaw. His bald areas went, you know, got hair.
Well, this is all fascinating. Where is it written? Where can one find out?
I will email you this because it's so mind blowing what he's done for different diseases using young wheat plants.
So he's claiming he can actually manipulate genetic.
Yes.
Coding. All right, I've got it. Thank you very much. I'll look forward to that email, and I will share it with the audience. Have you heard anything about that, Greg?
Well, I have not heard it from this doctor. There are other researchers right here in our own country. Dr. Bruce Lipton, for example, has found something very similar. He's found that the membrane of the cell translates what's in the field around us into what we find in the DNA of our cells. So the membrane takes that electromagnetic information and translates it into whatever DNA is. Now that we can read DNA, DNA says God within the body, suggesting that the stuff that's out there in that field is whatever it is before it's in the body. So if the DNA is saying God within the body, then the field is simply a God, whatever and however we interpret that to be.
But you agree there could be electromagnetic influence of some sort?
Oh, certainly, certainly. Electromagnetic is part of it, and it goes even beyond that. It goes into scalar kinds of information for the engineers listening out there.
Gotcha. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Greg Braden. Hi.
Hello, Art. It's a pleasure to be on the show. My name is Michael. Greg, I'd like to talk to you about a few things. I don't think you're aware of it, but I believe that you may very well be the next Oppenheimer in history. It seems like what you're talking about is not so much a message, but possibly the Tetragrammaton. This Yahweh, is actually the Jewish Tetragrammaton, Yud Heh Vav Heh, for the unspeakable name of God. And this is supposed to be the name that God spoke when creation was manifested. And it's believed that if mankind ever actually understands this name and is able to pronounce it, that all life in the universe would cease to exist. This is a very strong part of Jewish mysticism and Kabbalah, and I'm wondering if you're aware of this and if you're aware of the possible ramifications of the work that you're doing, that you may not actually be decoding a message, but you may actually be undoing creation itself.
Exactly. Lighting a fuse, yeah, okay. What about it, Greg?
The answer, I'm aware of that. That's one of the reasons that we took so long speaking with many experts, including many rabbis, in the field about the interpretation of those traditions and those texts, and precisely what it is that they say to us. To translate a code of this nature requires something that is called a primer. Once we find the way the code works with one word, we can, if we can find that word in other places in the code, it tells us what we need to do. It appears that the name, the ancient name of God that you're referring to, is that primer. Once we found that primer in one part of the code, as we look for that in other places, it tells us what parameters have to be in place.
But what about the danger?
Okay, I asked the rabbis this question, and at least I have not spoken with every rabbi in the world, obviously. The ones we've spoken with said that that was a human interpretation of those texts and those scriptures, that the scriptures don't actually say that. That is the human interpretation.
Okay.
And there are other places where the interpretation is just the opposite. To be fair, and for the listeners who are listening tonight, there are places in those old texts that say when we use any other name other than the name of God that we find that was revealed on Mount Sinai or that we find in our bodies, if we use another name, that it is a dishonoring or disrespect of that creative force in our bodies. So we find it going both ways.
All right.
It's very interesting.
Yes. East of the Rockies, your turn with Greg Braden. Hello.
Art, thanks so much for working through the Beatles in tonight's incredibly important subject.
You're very welcome.
The only one you missed was Lennon's Across the Universe.
Mm.
Guys, I love this subject because it represents the world's ultimate paradox, or maybe division. It's become understood that the ultimate divine in most religions, like mostly Western, cannot be defined by logic, but rather should simply be felt through the spirit or soul through the definition of the word that we call faith. Yet it was logical science of thought, philosophy, that first introduced an above-all, end-all entity that must exist simply because the mind of man recognized it. To go back to the reference of the Quran, its diehard worshippers, like those in Jakarta, praise medicine, astronomy, and mathematics as arts that give direct glory to God.
Mm-hmm.
This leads to my question regarding the Time magazine cover story of October 04 by, Jeff Kluger, called The God Gene. And I was wondering about your impressions of it, and second of all, in being raised Roman Catholic myself, I was always taught to believe that the division between science and faith was ultimate, and when the two worlds did combine, that it was an end of times, yet, you know, being the one world religion. Yet, if the ultimate religion actually is God's way of communicating, again, through mathematics and everything else, is it actually... does it more relate to the 2012 scenario, to where it's actually an age of enlightenment more so than an age of ending?
All right. Well, that's a lot of questions. Two big ones, anyway. Where would you like to begin, Greg?
Well, the two very big, broad questions.
Yes.
I'm wondering if we can combine the two of them together. The idea of marrying science and spirituality, they are two information systems. And again, I'm looking at this from a scientific perspective and looking at it as a unifying principle without the cultural implications. I am agreeing and acknowledging those cultural implications are there. For me, the focus is a focus of peace. We find ourselves in a world today where peace is a strategic imperative. It's no longer a nice philosophical concept. We've got to find a way to become greater than our differences. We need a unifying principle that excludes no one to do that. Spirituality is an information system that has been around for at least 8,000 years, and it is a very complete information system that uses a different language. Science, Western science, is only about 400 years old. It's good, it simply is incomplete. When we marry those two kinds of information together, it yields a wisdom greater than either one do individually, and I think it behooves us to do that. I believe that that is the ultimate wisdom of where we're going with.
How were you struck by that article, The God Gene?
I did not read that article in its entirety. I saw it in the airport.
Really?
Yeah. Was that, is it?
I would have thought you'd have been all over that.
I was out of the country the week that came out.
Well, then get it and read it.
Well, I will. And I agree with what the gentleman is saying. The ultimate experience, the direct experience of what this means, that is an experience that affects the faith of the individual. What we're looking at is a Western scientific, concrete, tangible, left-brain way of telling us we're part of something greater and we're part of one another and we're no fluke of nature.
And I would like to add that years ahead of that article was Matthew Alper. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Greg Braden. Hi.
Hi, Art. Hi, Greg. Actually, this is Greg from Henderson, Nevada, KXNT.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Greg.
I've got one question that probably won't be too popular with the bulk of the listeners, and a rhetorical question. With this code, it almost sounds like, you know, the DNA strand, maybe humanity itself, was a genetic engineering project, cedar project, and maybe Yahweh is actually not God, but the race that created it, and the Yahweh will live on forever through you.
Okay, well, I think he admitted that could be so in the beginning of the show.
Maybe it was the race civilization in India that destroyed itself. Okay, and sorry. And I guess the rhetorical question was, for the events in India with elephants bursting into flames and birds turning to ash, how did anyone survive to give those accounts?
Well, I don't think they did, right, Greg?
Well, according to the Mahabharata is the 100,000-line text that recorded this. The Bhagavad Gita is a smaller portion of that. The two civilizations destroyed themselves. They rendered the land useless for thousands of years. Obviously, someone survived long enough to talk about this. And there are records of that battle on the temple walls in Egypt as well. We photographed the hieroglyphs that actually show a battle unfolding. Something happened a long time ago. We're still trying to figure out what it was.
All right. On our international line, you're on the air with Greg Braden. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Steve from Toronto.
Yes.
Yasha Yahweh bless you for telling the truth. Greg, just one question and maybe one correction. God, does it actually come out God? Because the origins of God in Hebrew is not a righteous title for Yahweh. And another question.
No,
is,
hold on.
Well, sure. The clues that we followed were in the 4,000-year-old Sefer Yetzirah, the book of creation, the third book of the Kabbalah.
Mm-hmm.
And in it's a 1,000-line text, and in that text, it actually equates the name of God we find in ourselves with the word God and the word eternal equally.
Hmm.
So the answer is yes, according to the Sefer Yetzirah.
Have you ever tried to use the word Yasha, which is Strong's Concordance word 3091, which means Yahweh is Savior?
I have not. All I did was I took the numbers I converted the DNA into numbers and then linked those to the letters of the Hebrew, the Arabic, Sanskrit alphabets, and then translated those directly into English.
So maybe you have some new numbers with Yasha.
Could be. If the numbers come out differently in deeper layers of the code, then that's certainly where we'll follow those.
You'll go where the numbers take you.
Precisely. Otherwise, we're imposing our beliefs, and that's where we're looking at those clouds, Art.
Gotcha. First-time caller line, perhaps a quick question. Hello.
Hello.
You're on the air with Greg Braden. Extinguish your radio right away, please.
Oh, yes, all right, then.
Thank you.
Oh, good evening.
Good evening.
Greg and Art.
Yes.
Good evening.
I'm very interested in what you have to say. It's most interesting and enlightening. What do you have to say about DNA?
Yes.
Have you read a book called Seeing with the Eyes of the Soul? About 6 volumes of it.
I have not. I don't get out much. I haven't read much. I've been busy translating DNA.
In this book here, you know, in these volumes, God says he lives in the heart. He lives in the heart of our hearts.
Mm.
He has a heart within our hearts. And anyway, it's so exciting. I've forgotten what it's all.
Well, these are kind of different ways of seemingly saying the same thing.
Yes.
A heart within a heart. God
by the
within
way,
our bodies. All sort of the same thing.
Yeah. By the way, I'm a Catholic, and we sing lots of... we have many hymns to Yahweh, by the way.
Well, you do. You find almost universally. And again, Art, it comes back. Many listeners may be familiar with Heinrich Schliemann. the amateur archaeologist of the 19th century. He read the book, The Iliad, that was believed to be fictional. He simply said, what if these are literal instructions to an ancient civilization? He followed them step by step, and he found and excavated the ancient city of Troy. My question is, could the same thing be possible? All the texts that say, if you want to know who you are, look within, seek within, and ye shall find. Sefer Yetzirah tells us step by step how to do that. My question was, what if we take it literally? Where will it lead us, and where it led us is God eternal within the body thus far. We'll see where it goes from there.
And I'm going to be fascinated to see where it goes. All right, Greg, your book, The God Code, The Secret of Our Past, The Promise of Our Future, is available, I assume, in all the usual places, Amazon.com and so forth?
Barnes Noble, Amazon.com, and wherever books are sold.
How have sales gone so far? How's
It is a bestseller. It went paperback in February of this year. And to be honest, I've been on the road the last 7 weeks. We just came back from the conference, International Conference on Science and Consciousness, where people were speaking from all over the world about this field that connects everything together and how ideas within the field affect us on a global level.
Was all of this a sort of a natural progression from 0 point? I mean, there's a commonality, isn't there?
For me, it is, Art, because it's all about us becoming better people and hopefully creating a better world and doing it within the context of this time in history. So the answer is yes, that's the umbrella.
Well, listen, my friend, quite obviously, as you decode more, we will have you back. And I'm certainly looking forward to the coming layers. Mm.
Art, I appreciate it very much. Thanks for being such a gracious host and for having the forum so we can have these. I'm amazed that 3 hours went by so quickly.
Good night, my friend.
All right, good night.
Take care. That's it for tonight. See you tomorrow night. Don't forget, tell any hams, you know, to be listening tomorrow night because we'll repeat all that. Here's Crystal from the High Desert. Ciao.
Midnight in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. Magical journey will take us on a ride, filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it to tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you?